Blog Talk Radio.
Talk Radio live on the air right now, which is usually heard every Monday night from 7:30 to 9 with Randy Zilli and Mike Tramatazzi, but tonight's a special edition. We're taking a night off of sports to talk reality TV, and I'd like to introduce a good friend of mine, Drew, believe it or not, an interview we did, and I'd like to invite Katie Hutchinson, who was in the Spike hit television show Bar Rescue during the second season. And this crazy show was put together because we want to give you, the Bar Rescue fans, an update on a lot of the different bars that were featured on the show. And so, Katie, we welcome you in, straight from Baltimore.
Thank you. Very excited to be here.
And let's tell everybody the way they can get in contact with us tonight. Since you are the social media guru, and I'm just a poor guy with a microphone, I'm going to let you tell everybody how they can find us right now.
Tell them how they can find what?
How they can find us, how they can communicate with us.
Okay, so this evening, hopefully for those of you who are on Twitter, you can tweet us using the hashtag #RescueEdition, and so we can take some of your questions live. Or if you are on Facebook, feel free to message us or send chat to us. Again, my name is Katie Hutchinson. You can pull me up on Facebook.
And you can also go to, you can like us at Real Sports Talk Radio, as well as Back Sports page. Leave a message on the Real Sports Talk Radio if you have any questions for our special guest tonight at 9 o'clock. We'll have Chef Brian Duffy on with us, and we'll talk about Bar Rescue, talk about projects he's been involved with, and we'll talk about a bunch of different fun topics. And we also have a lot of different updates tonight from some of the shows that that have been aired on Spike TV, some of your favorites. We have some, I don't want to say shocking news, but some breaking news on some of the bars that were featured, and as well as some other special guests going to be joining us live. And so Katie, let's start off with how this thing sort of came together here. Back in, I think it was December, I interviewed Chef Duffy for a feature on food, sports food, and what sports bars should be handling, you know, what they should be doing for a good operation for sports and everything. I like to take my interests and mix them all together into sports, and that's how I am. I was born that way, and I'm very good at mixing. I don't drink, but that's my mixology right there. Okay? Huh? Look at that. I like that reference. That was awesome. See, look at that. I'm on fire right now. So with that being said, I found a way to talk with Chef Duffy. And we were talking on the phone. This 25-minute interview turned into a 2.5-hour interview. We were talking for so long. And I told him, I said, one of my favorite episodes Bar Rescue was during the second season, and it was the Murphy Mess, the J.A. Murphy episode. And he says to me, oh, I know exactly who you should talk to. And it's from Katie Hutch. She's awesome. She's the best. You'll get so much out of her because she was right there through the experience. And I was like, okay. So he hooked you and I up through Twitter. And from that point on, well, let's just say I feel very bad for you because you deal with me now all the time.
Yeah, but it's all been good. All been good stuff.
Katie is now a part of the Back Sports Page family. You can check out her great story that she did on, I can't pronounce his last name well, O.J. Briggs. Did I get it right?
Yes.
O.J.
Yes,
Briggs.
The legend.
The legendary Raven. Katie, of course, being down in Baltimore, is a huge Baltimore sports fan. So it's one of the reasons, and she has such a different view of sports, similar to the one that I have. So it's a perfect fit. And you can always catch Katie on Twitter, especially during Bar Rescue. She's always giving her opinion. And Katie, you know, like, so I say this again to you. Welcome again to the Back Sports Page family, and welcome to Real Sports Talk Radio. And talk about the experience of not only being with us, but also putting this, helping put this show together.
Okay. Well, let's see. Yes, all of this is very new, and you always hit me up with your crazy ideas, and I'm crazy enough to go along with them. So this has been a match made in heaven so far.
Well, let's talk about – oh, sorry, go ahead. I apologize for cutting you off. Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
I was about to say, I want to talk to you real quick about how your episode came about. Talk to us – explain to everybody who's listening about how the Murphy's Mess episode came around.
Okay. So I became a huge fan of the show in season one. And I was a bartender currently at a bar called J. Murphy's in South Point. And while the season was progressing, my bar started kind of tanking. So I was really curious as to how you got on the show. And on the last episode of season one, they put a little blurb at the bottom of the screen saying, if, you know, your bar is failing, contact Bar Rescue at, and they posted an email address. So I basically emailed to the email address, you know, a couple paragraphs, kind of told them about our crew, kind of told them why I thought we were failing, what our issues were. And unbeknownst to my owners, of course, and then I just submitted it, and really, for there, it happened very quickly. I just started getting emails, and then all of a sudden, I had a voicemail from a casting producer in L.A. that was flying out the next day to meet us, and from then on out, it was just rounds and rounds of different casting producers and people from the show coming. And loving us and loving the whole story. And, yeah, just over a couple months that took place. And then John Taffer showed up.
Talk to the listening audience about the filming process, about the I don't want to say, you know, like you knew when what was coming, because I don't know this. This is all new information to me, too. I'm learning this as I'm going along. But talk about that process. Did they say to you, okay, well, we're going to be filming from this time to this time, just be ready, be prepared, or how did that come along?
You know, they do really try and keep the element of surprise. So it's really funny because, for example, like I have a day job. I had a day job then, too. I was only bartending at nighttime. So I was kind of keeping my day job informed because I keep, you know, being told, okay, I think we might be on it. I think we're doing well. And then basically the day before, they do come through and, you know, put in lighting and put in cameras and things. And then you just kind of know that you've gotten it. And then at that point, they approach you about your schedule after John Taffer comes. And I just made myself very available. I took my entire, you know, week of vacation off from my job because we were basically filming 12 hours a day. And then obviously you saw in the episode that we had structural issues, which were completely real. So instead of your typical 5-day bar rescue filming, we were actually 10 days. So we were definitely extended, and they were very, very long days. I think that they make you film so long that you get cranky, hoping that you'll fight with each other. That's what I honestly think.
Okay, so, Katie, real quick, here's what we're going to do. I want to hear more about the filming experience from Bar Rescue for the J. Murphy's Mess episode. Before we do that, I real quick want to remind everybody, of course, like Katie said before, Real Sports Talk Radio, Facebook, BackSportsPage.com, BackSportsPage on Facebook and on Twitter. You can find Katie all over the place on social media as well. And, of course, I want to pay respect to one of our sponsors as well, Upbeat Custom Creations. They bring fame to your name. Go UpbeatCustomCreations.net. Ask for Mike, and he will take care of you with hats, shirts, anything you need with your logo on it. And I think before we move forward with more of the Murphy's Mess episode, Katie, I think we need to serve it for our listeners for some news from one of the bars. And from Bar Rescue, awesome. And let's go to Las Vegas. Let's take about, if you're a fan of the, we're going to plug our friends over at BarRescueUpdates.com. Go to BarRescueUpdates.com. They have a preview and a recap of every new episode of the show. They've posted about a lawsuit from the Sand Dollars / Bar 702. If you remember, that was the one where the owner of the bar hit on John Taffer's wife. it was such a weird episode, but it looked like it was a very successful episode. It was very uncomfortable for both men, males and females. It was very like, okay, I can't believe this guy. You can't be that big of a player and do something like that and not feel like, you know, you feel uncomfortable watching that. So,
no, wait, but I want to know how many people at that point actually bent their arm to check out.
what this guy is talking about. You know what? I was really thinking when I saw that.
What?
I'm sitting there going, no, turn away. No, you have no idea what's coming at you next. No, this is only going to end bad for you. And now, you know, so meanwhile, on BarRescueUpdates.com, they put a big thing. There's a lawsuit going on. Well, we're going to break the news before Bar Rescue Updates do. There seems to be a changing of the guard over at the Sand Dollars / Bar 702. Apparently, there's new ownership, and the new ownership had an opportunity to talk with us. So here, they took a few minutes and talked to us, and here's what the new owner had to say.
Hi, my name is Brooke Alexander, and I just bought Bar 702. We are really excited about it, and we're going to bring back and focus on live music and bring back the Sand Dollar Lounge. We're going to bring back the blues, jazz, acoustic sets, and really everything that's making Vegas and all the exciting music that's growing here. We're also going to do lots of specials, craft beers, some craft cocktails, happy hour, reverse happy hour. We'll have food trucks, and we'll also have some of our own food and specials here that so we'll have food at all times, and that'll go along with our specials. You can check out our calendar at www.bar702lv.com. So that's bar702lv.com.
Okay, so there it is. There it is.
Yeah.
So there's that's the new owner of the Sand Dollar. So, like I said, we promised we were going to break a little bit of news. We'll might as well get some of the news out of the way here now, because before we go back to the Murphy's Mess, I definitely want to hear some more about this. The other piece of news was we had an interview with another one of the bar owners, and they said that they had traveled to Las Vegas and gone through the Las Vegas bars that John had fixed, and they had said that just like Bar Rescue Updates did, they said the end had moved locations. But when they got to Las Vegas, they said that the end has officially closed. Now, I don't know if that's accurate or not, because we tried to reach out to the end through Facebook and for comments for the show tonight, and we tried to reach out to them via phone. And we had no luck. There was a few bars that we tried to reach out to tonight and had no luck whatsoever. But I feel that this was that's a little bit of a shock, because I thought that was one of the more successful shows and one of the more popular shows that aired for them was the Halloween bar. What's your take on this?
Yeah, I mean, I'll say this. I thought it was super cool. I definitely wanted to see it. It could be very niche. But then again, like, it's Vegas. I mean, the Vegas is flashy. Vegas, you know, has everything. I would think it would have done well there. The interesting part is, you said that we think, to our knowledge, that they're closed.
I'm sorry.
What were you said about the end?
I'll spill the beans. Donna from Chalene 17 and her daughter, if you remember, that was the episode where there was the horse and the motorcycle in the bar. They told me last night that they traveled throughout Las Vegas and went to all the different bars because John rescued quite a few bars from Las Vegas. Some of them have already closed. But they went to the end, but the first they went to the old location, and the cab driver says, yeah, they moved around the corner, and then it said closed on the door. And this was like at like 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. You know, there's a lot of, you know, it seems like that they said that the bar had closed. We had never heard back. I thought they were still updating on their Facebook page, so I guess that's a wait and see whether they're
still
open.
That's what I was going to say. They're pretty active on Facebook still. They've pretty much been posting, like, every day.
Well, maybe they were closed for a short amount of time. So, you know, it could be, like I said, it could have been that could have been while they were moving. You know, we don't know. I don't know the time frame there. So there was that piece of news. And then there is another piece of news, and it goes with our next update. Now, I originally wanted to do our first bar rescue update, and we have a few minutes to do this, and I'm like, Katie, I swear I want to get back to this, get back to your episode. But we left off on bar rescue with the Houston Sports Pub, if you remember correctly. And
yeah.
We had Sean and Justin and, you know, it became apparent if you went to Bar Rescue Updates, we're certainly plugging them a whole lot tonight. BarRescueUpdates.com posted that Justin posted on his Facebook page that they called, Bar Rescue had called them. When I had spoken to Justin earlier this week for a brief update, and by the way, if you hear any static files, we did not have the best means for recording equipment, so I do apologize for that. I did speak to Justin yesterday. Justin told me that Sean is no longer part of the bar. He is no longer part owner with him. And things have been going well. Here's what Sean had to say about the Houston Sports Pub. And then we're going to jump back in to Murphy's Mess with Katie.
Hi, this is Justin from the Houston Sports Pub, formerly at the Hand Zone Sports Bar and Grill. So far, since the remodel with Bar Rescue, we've done really well. A lot of new faces have been coming in the last few weeks since our show aired especially. And it's really cool meeting all these new faces, especially from different states.
And any of the old problems recur? Or has everything been, like, awesome?
okay. As far as any of the old problems, you know, I keep a very clean bar. John Tapper really taught us how to keep everything with your team in check. There's been a few of the employees that are no longer at the bar anymore that were on the show. But, you know.
If you're not understanding what he just said, he basically just said Sean was no longer part of the bar. That's what,
okay.
Like I said, some of the quality there was not that great. But Justin explained to me that the bar has been doing well. It's been received very well. What did you think of that last episode?
I don't know. I mean, it was definitely a good episode. It's always interesting, actually, the dynamic between them, and especially now that we've found out that the one is left, it kind of reminds me of the dynamic between my two owners. The cool thing about it, though, is if you check out their Facebook page, their main image is their whole team, including both of them. So if he's gone, it seems like at least it's on good terms.
Yeah, part I didn't get out of him, you know, and that's, I think, part of the part, you know, we didn't want to go really deep into because, you know, whatever happens, those two guys are friends, you know. Sometimes it's better when friends are not business together. And, you know, you can explain that better than anyone because, look, you had a situation where you had two owners that were, you know, fraternity brothers and they opened the bar. You know, talk about
right.
That dynamic. Talk about that dynamic. And also talk about it, you know, because the one thing that I've learned about calling a lot of these bars to get comments from people is there's a lot of times the bar owners weren't there. So, like, were your guys there?
Yeah, definitely. Well, if you watched the episode, I mean, Joel wasn't really there the time that I worked there. Keith was there every single day, pretty much all night, which was actually an issue. What you're going to learn about the business is that the owner really shouldn't be there all the time. You know, the part of the owner is to find and train people to kind of do it for them. And so, you know, they just handle the business side and, you know, they have a good GM that's there every day running the business. Not to say they shouldn't stop in and check on things and be a part of it, But, you know, that's the hard part because owners, you know, then want to be personalities in the bars. Then you get into the drinking and the drama and all that nonsense. So, yes, mine were around all the time. But after the rescue, Keith actually backed off and wasn't really there as much and kind of had us run it more.
Now, here's the question. Were you working when Taffer walked in?
I was not. I was set to work that night, but they had three of us on. Obviously, the night that he's walking in, you do know that that's going to happen. We walked in for our shift like normal, and the lighting was hooked up. We couldn't have music on. And our bar, we never had three of us there. So since all three of us had checked in, they told me to just sit at the bar and hang out. So I am in the beginning scenes, but I'm sitting on the other side of the bar drinking.
You're sitting there drinking. That must have been right. Oh, okay, yeah. Now,
no, you're right. It was a really rough first day. I'll give you that.
Now, talk about the situation with Samantha coming in for your episode, you know, with the recon. Like, did they tell you, like, all right, this is the day Taffer's coming in, or did they just say, be on guard and be ready to go?
Yeah, they pretty much tell you, be on guard, he could come in tonight. But obviously, like a lot of people say, you'll notice in filming that the bars are very bright and there's not music on. So you kind of, you're just doing your normal thing, but you're kind of on edge. And word gets out that filming is going on and things like that. So our bar that night was more packed out than it usually was in the previous months. So we were just kind of on guard for him to bust in at any second.
And your reaction when he did come in?
Oh, he is a lot bigger and louder in person. I will tell you that. He makes you jump. He is so loud when he screams.
That's awesome. I'm sorry that you guys got yelled at. But, like, and then when he was yelling in the kitchen, did you guys hear him?
Oh, my God, yes. Okay. I don't know if people understand how small this bar was. We were a little tiny dive. So me sitting at the bar, I was maybe only, like, a couple yards away from the kitchen. And of course, everybody got so silent in the whole bar as soon as he walked in. That part was scary. I felt bad for Tammy. Tammy's my girl, but she was the one that he came after first. So it is what it is.
Well, if you guys have questions for Katie, hop on Twitter, hashtag Rescue Edition. We'll read the questions on the air live, and Katie will answer questions from her experience on the show, and I think it'll be awesome. Real quick, to give everybody a little preview of what's going on. Again, you're listening to Real Sports Talk Radio, the Rescue Edition. Katie, should we surprise them of who we spoke to, or should we just let them know coming up of who they're going to hear from?
No, I just say we surprise them, but we'll save the big shockers for the end.
Okay, we'll save the big shockers for the end. And, of course, Chef Brian Duffy tonight at 9 o'clock. And we have a couple of surprises, people passing along some messages for Duffy. Some of the bars that he helped rescue. Talk about the training, because obviously you have, like you just said, you had 10 days of filming, and you cut it down to like 48 minutes, 42 minutes. How difficult was the training?
Training was hard. It was also hard because we had to relocate. And I know that a lot of bars do that because they'll train during the renovations. We were nice enough to have, you know, Baltimore is a city with a small town feel. We, you know, there was plenty of bars on our street or within a couple blocks of us that offered to let us use the bar during the day while they weren't open so we could go in and train. So we would, just train in empty bars during the day. And Chris Cardone is the tough one. I mean, he's one of my, you know, still good friends. We keep in touch. But as a trainer, you know, he was rough.
Now, can you – let's fill in the blank. Let's give the Bar Rescue Update people something to put on the update thing for their site for us. It's J.A. Murphy's. What happened? Why did it close?
Okay, so J.E. Murphy's closed before the episode even aired. What basically happened is we were doing, you know, really well. Everybody was, like, recommitted. And then things just started slipping. It just went back to how it was. You know, things are, you can't serve certain things on the menu because the owners didn't go to the store. And you don't have garnishes because the owner didn't go to the store. And we're out of liquor because the owner didn't, you know, buy enough. And so it just kind of started slipping. And then I had heard rumors that they were looking to sell. And I asked Keith about it. And Keith said, nope, not at all. You know, crazy rumors. And the next day there were papers on the door saying that we were shut down, basically for lack of paying the bills. So that's what happened. It was very abrupt, but, you know, I felt bad for everybody else, you know, that that's their sole source of income. We had a lot of employees that weren't expecting it.
And how much did it affect, you know, what happened with the owners? How did it affect them? Because didn't they, I think you told me that they were denying it. They were denying, and then out of nowhere.
No, yeah, that's the part that I was, you know, so mad about and still kind of mad about because, you know, in the service industry, you just become like a family. You're very tight. And especially after Bar Rescue, we were even more bonded. So, and the fact that we're only a couple of years age-wise within each other, we were good friends. So when I approached him about the rumors I had heard, you know, I was coming to him saying, have the decency to prepare everyone if this is what's going to happen. Because I had a job to fall back on, but so many of them didn't. So when they just denied, and then the very next day it happened, and he said to me, oh, well, you know what? We got an offer and we sold the bar. And that's BS too, because the bar was not sold. The bar was shut down, and then it went to auction. And then, like, a couple months later, and then somebody bought it from the auction.
Ah, okay. So that's the real story right there. And that probably...
Well, you can't really deny it when there's papers on the front door of the bar for everyone to walk by and read.
Well, that's true, too. And, you know, there seems like with a lot of these bars that we see on Bar Rescue, there seems to be what's brought to, you know, on camera are a lot of bad decisions that were made. And we actually spoke to... I don't want to label these people, you know, because they were nice enough to give us their time with bad decisions. But, you know, like owners who are very involved with, you know, their employees with drinking and partying and other situations, it's going to lead to disaster. And there's been some really good success stories, and there's some people who love the work that Taffer and everybody did, and there's other people who don't like the work that
right.
has been done. And
absolutely.
Yeah, and, you know, There was one bar in California that that I really liked the story, and that you and I were talking about this during the week when we were putting the show together. And it's not one where it's a great success story where they're going to go out and franchise. And it's it was more of a, you know, there was a woman out there who stood her ground because she thought something was a good idea. And I'm talking about the, if you remember the Bar Rescue episode of Lona's Katina. With the lobster tank.
Yes.
And you know, she fought so hard, and I'm telling you, I had she was so nervous about doing this message with us, and she's such a sweetheart, and I really enjoyed talking with her. She called me again today. She goes, "What time are you guys going to be on the air? You know, I want to be able to listen." I gave her the website, and she was just so excited about the fact that we cared enough to want to call her. And you know, I thought it was, you know, she fought protesters with that lobster tank, and she dealt with a lot of BS to hold on to that lobster tank, and they're still going.
Oh, I didn't
and
know
still
that.
Playing. Yeah, there was a whole bunch of different things going on there, and she was such a sweetheart, and she was such a nice person to talk to about it, and you know, the experience, and you know, she broke down, and she said, you know, they called about the lobster tank to get it in there, and you know, the thing was, the lobster tank company was run by her friend. So she didn't want, you know, she didn't want to burn a bridge with her friend. And they said, "Listen, you have to come and take the tank away. We're still good friends. We'll go out for lunch this week." that's how she explained it to me. Lona was very nervous about doing this message with us. Here it is. If And so here's
from Water City Limits Cantina in California. We're in two cities, Long Beach and Signal Hill. I just wanted to update everyone on my show experience, Bar Rescue. It was a really great experience. I've met so many people from all over East Coast and West Coast, Hawaii and Big Bear. It's amazing how many people really do follow the show and go where the show has been. Everyone, if you're in the area, please stop in and pay us a visit. We have really a great full menu, breakfast, lunch, and dinner, 16 ice-cold beers on tap from Bar Rescue, lots of great cocktails, and the best staff ever, and lots of very friendly people, and we'd like you to be part of them. Before John Chaffer left, he took me aside and he said that he had done over 800 bars and I was one of his favorites. And it was really tough and hard experience. I cried a lot, but I know he meant what he said. And I learned a lot about myself through him. Do I stop?
She's such a sweetheart, and it was a pleasure, out of all the ones I did with this, you know, doing this project with you and putting this show together, I think talking with her, you know, me wanting to go out to California just to go to her bar now, and this is coming from someone who doesn't drink, I think that says something, you know what I mean?
Yeah, absolutely.
She's a sweetheart, and I loved her episode. You know what I wanted to ask her, but I didn't have a chance to, is how Coach is doing. Remember the guy, the older guy behind the bar, Coach?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, it's one of those things. So, you know, that decision, you know, I think it was a tough decision to have a lobster tank and have people pick their own lobster to eat. I think that's like a tough decision to do. You know, we made this rundown up for tonight. I put this under, you know, tough decisions, bad decisions, or, you know.
Yeah.
I think, you know, I put that under there. There was another episode, and I'm not going to play the full clip because this is a 4-minute clip, and I don't think it warrants the full 4 minutes. But we talk about updates, and we talk about how people are not happy with some of the things that happened with Bar Rescue. If you remember, there was a bar from Atlanta, Georgia called The Comeback. It was Brelo's first, and it was a smoking bar, and the owner, Susan, and her partner, John, were not getting along, and they were just weren't even talking to each other. One was undermining the other. We spoke to Susan yesterday, and she sounded like she was under, I don't know, if, I don't want to say make any assumptions. You know
she
where
was really happy.
What? She was really happy. Is that what we're going with? Is that where we're going with this? Okay. I'm okay with that. Here's a little bit of what Susan had to say about her experience with Bar Rescue.
On The Comeback, we were No Crying in the Bar Business episode, I believe season 3. And Jamie, would you agree it was an interesting experience?
Oh, it was very interesting. Something I wouldn't want to go through again.
Now, on the show, Jamie did cry more than me while they were filming. I won't lie, I cried a lot. Talk is very scary. But, what do you think, Jamie?
Yeah, he was that scary on air, but also he was pretty nice, but you cried way more than me.
That is true, but I have to work with people like Jamie and, you know, my partner John, who's still around. But we're still a smoking bar. We still have a lot of the same problems we had before the show.
The menu they gave us did not work at all. The hours they gave us did not work at all. It actually killed our business a little bit.
Wow.
But yet we're still open because we are the Comeback Kids. Started from the bottom, now we're here. I believe that's that song. But anyway, it was a good experience. I got some jail mail, which was very exciting. Thank you all for, you know, thinking of me, and I will not pose as Wonder Woman in a picture. I will not do that. I have my limits.
So you get the general idea on how this conversation went. Listen, I spoke to Susan for a good 25 minutes, and she, again, another sweetheart. you know, this seems like they were just very not thrilled with what's going on. Apparently there was a promise. You know, it's, I don't know. It was just very, 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 very difficult. That was a difficult one because I think when you're in Atlanta, Atlanta is still one of the few states that allowed smoking in a bar, and they were going to change that. And they didn't help, they really didn't help the cause when they didn't when that vote of that law got pushed back. So they wiped away the smoking and non-smoking in that bar. So now So now it was just the smoking area. So it really, really, you know. So, you know, that was a little bit of a weird one. Let's transition.
It reminded me of Pirates a little bit.
Well, let's talk about, we were talking about that bad decisions. Listen, you just opened the floodgates to Pirates. Let's do it. Cause let's,
You have to.
Okay. Yeah.
Everyone
wants
to hear
okay.
about Pirates.
Listen, Katie, listen, you and I have been, you know, you and I have been friends and working together now for a couple months. And when the topic of bar rescue comes up, I think I want to say at least 70% of the time when we start talking about, you know, anything with bar rescue, Pirates ends up coming up somehow. Like, we end up talking about it, or you keep on saying, like, I want to go over the Pirates at some point or another. We contacted Pirates. We contacted them.
Yes,
we
did.
If they wanted to be, we wanted, and I contacted them, and I spoke to somebody on the phone over there, and I said to them, we're not anti-bar rescue. We're not pro-bar rescue. We're just doing a show to update everybody. And the young lady on the phone, she was really nice, very sweet, and she said to me, we don't know what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say. We all had to sign things.
Oh.
So say what you want to say. I guess there was some sort of, you know, unbeknownst to any of us, may have been some sort of legal thing, or maybe it was just the thing that Tracy made her employees sign. I don't know. But they told us they didn't know what they were allowed to say to us and not allowed to say to us. So with that being said, Pirates, I think, was the perfect example of, this is going to sound harsh because I never met Tracy. I didn't even think to talk to Tracy. As someone who, after reading John's book, John Tapper's book, was not honest with John about some of her fears of making a change. And from
right.
what they were all, and from what you were telling me too, was it you who told me that they were shopping around for a reality show?
Yeah, that was the rumor that they were shopping around shows before Bar Rescue picked them up, yeah. That she just wanted a makeover. But in my opinion, if you've ever watched Bar Rescue, these people who are like, oh my God, you're going to change the name? Like, no kidding. Have you seen Bar Rescue? Like, if your bar is doing bad and the name is not helping you, if your name is not, you know, doesn't hold a lot of history that they want to maintain, they're going to change your name. It's part of the deal.
Well, not only that, but, you know, the thing, and what I'm, for those who haven't read John's book and don't know what I'm talking about when Tracy not being honest with John, was Tracy later admitted to John that she had an issue with corporate America. And what did John call the bar? Corporate.
I'll admit that was a little, that makeover was a little harsh.
Yeah, you know what I mean? So if someone, like if she would have came out and said, listen, can we do a different type of concept because I had really bad experiences in the corporate world. Again, this is what was said in John's book. If you have a real complex about that, I think you should say something about it. That's just me. That's just me, though. You know what I mean? I think that was really, really important, and it was an important thing that probably should have been brought to attention. And then, of course, after the show aired, for those who don't know this, if this is all a new shock about this, there was a YouTube video of them burning all the stuff that John put into the bar. They burned everything. They had a YouTube video, and John actually responded on Spike's website, which was even funnier. He's just saying, you know, John had that little puss on his face, like, I hope they do fail.
Right. No, and like I told you before, they filmed Pirates right before my episode. So a lot of the same crew and everything kind of carried over because, you know, they hire a lot of local. So the crew carried over, and the crew was just like, those people, they were so mean and just hated them that the crew was, like, so happy to come to Fell's Point and be with us because we were just so excited that they were there, and they had such a bad experience with the the people at Pirates, because the whole time they were filming, these people, they hated them. Like, not the crew hating them, the Pirates and the employees there just hated the crew and the whole process, which is, it's just so hard to understand after you've been through it, how you could be so, so ungrateful. It was, like, infuriating to me.
That's in an old way, it's sort of funny. But, like, it's funny, like, wow, it's sort of like, well, that's weird. But, you know, the funny thing is, and the one thing you can say about Pirates is that they seem like they were like a family, and that's going to transition us. That's what we call a segue in the radio biz. Okay.
I want to say one very quick thing. I met the Pirates, not Tracy, but I met the Pirates, and I loved them. They came to see me at Murphy's, and they were great. They were very sweet. We totally agreed that we had different experiences, shook on it. One of them kissed my hand, and we parted ways. But they were very nice people.
And you know, that's cool. The fact that they did come down and show support to you guys. I think that is awesome.
Absolutely.
And what's funny too, guys, I want you to understand with Katie too. Katie was emailing some of the bars, like the Brixton. We'll give a quick update on the Brixton in a few minutes. Katie would sign her emails and say, "Hello, fellow rescuee." And to me, that was like one of the funniest things in the world, because it's like, "Hello, yes, fellow rescuee, yes." And you're just sort of going, "All right." maybe
right, because then they want to talk to me.
Yes. They're like, "Well, okay, well, we like her. She's all bubbly. We just spoke to the other guy who was abrupt and a jerk," which was, I'm talking about me. So, you know, like,
until you go through it, you don't understand. It's very cool to meet each other, because we don't have an opportunity to meet each other, but we've essentially been through something very similar. So it's very cool.
You could have said to them, did Taffer make you guys do laps? No? Oh, you made us do laps.
No, right. Yeah. Like 12-hour days of being cranky and not eating.
Yeah.
Bring you together.
Like you guys said before, for Murphy's, and like the Pirates did, they were a family. They were a family, and you know, we see a lot of these bars on bar rescues that are family, and they're family owned. Like, not just like family. Like, okay, yeah, I love you like a brother. They're really brother or sister or parents or, you know, husband and wives. And we were able to touch base with a couple of them, and one of them is still one of my favorite episodes, and we've talked about it because we were talking about the end before, was Shalene's on 17. We spoke to Donna last night, and Donna was awesome, and Donna wanted to give everybody an update on how they're doing, because if you remember correctly, they had a bankruptcy court, and they had give an update on Shalene's on 17.
This is Donna Shalene from Shalene's on 17. We are doing great since John Taffer and the staff came in and rescued our bar. Thank you to all of our bar rescue fans, because without all the fans that come in to check it out, we wouldn't be doing as great as we are. Our sales are up 85% over last year since the show aired. John told us they'd go up 35%, so we're real pleased with the 85%. So the publicity and fan support has made a huge impact on our overall success. Not to mention, our barbecue is amazing thanks to our chef and our great drinks and moonshine. We really had a wonderful crew that helped us out, and we're really fortunate. The show not only made us change things in the restaurant, it made me personally change the way I do business. I have not had a drink in my bar since the show aired or since John Taffer buffalized me. So that's been huge. So it personally changed us as well. My daughter and I are running the show, got to kind of step back, and her and I are running the business together, and we're kicking butt and taking names, and we couldn't have done it without John Taffer and Bar Rescue. We are out of bankruptcy. We had investors come in and buy the bank out, so we no longer are in bankruptcy. So we really, 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 truly are grateful for everything that the show has done for us. It's almost like winning the lottery. Thank you, everybody.
Wow.
Now you understand. Over the last 24 hours, I was like, this was the best interview we did, because she was such a sweetheart, and they're so grateful that we called to check in. So, you know, that was to me.
That's
that was
so
the
awesome.
Part that really, Yeah, so they're doing great, and, you know, that's one for our friends over at Bar Rescue Update. That, look, they're out of bankruptcy. You know, they had people come in and help them out. You know, the show really helped change their lives in a positive way. So that's a good thing. We have some special guests who are going to be calling in a little bit. So I want to stay on the family concept here. And during season one, it was really hard to track down some of these season one bars because some of them were really busy, some of them are out of business. You know, Swanky Bubbles is gone. I believe the Swanky Bubbles was gone. And let's give the stat that everybody wants to hear. 11 of the 58 bars that they rescued have closed. 47 of the 58 are still open. One was not rescued. We all know which one that is. That's O'Face. Yeah. We'll go back to O'Face. Breakwall also closed during the first season. But one of the episodes that did air in the first season that I sort of liked, and we talked about family, was the, to me, was family, was the Blue Frog 22 in Chicago. The Blue Frog 22 in Chicago. If you remember, it was Mimi, and Mimi had the toys hanging up all over the place and was not giving her son any of the power. Well, Mimi and I spoke yesterday, and this is what Mimi had to say.
Hi, this is Mimi Witchy from Blue Frog 22. Discussing what life has been like after Bar Rescue. It's been very interesting. It's an experience that people ask us, would you do it again? And crazily enough, we probably would. In the long run, although you don't always agree with everything that happens, it's, I think, been a good direction for us to take, and they put us in that direction. There were things that we learned from the show, from John Tamper, that at the time maybe we resented a little bit of his direction, but then in the long run we realized it was a show. They did what they had to do to make the show interesting. And but the bottom line was is that he does know what he's doing. And things have been good for us. We didn't go 100% with everything they told us, but they gave us enough of a direction that I think it's given us a really good focus. My staff is happy with the changes. My son, my partner, is very happy with it. He's been very challenged by it, and I think it's brought out the best in us. So I think overall we're very happy with it.
So, see, you know, and she, if you remember, she was very disgruntled and very against.
But she was also
changes.
A drinker.
Yeah, that's true, too. I wasn't going to go that route, but okay, since you did that, all right.
Well, no, I'm not going to be mean, but that adds to the level of disgruntled. We all know that.
Yeah, that's true. But listen, Mimi was, when I spoke to Mimi on the phone, she was absolutely a sweetheart, and she was really surprised that we even remembered about her. Like, that was the type of attitude that she had, which was really cool. You know, like, I think, you know, the reception that we've gotten from wanting to do this has been great. And I'm glad that we were able to do this. There's one more family I think we want to check on, and it was the one that you and I were probably the most excited about also, out in Las Vegas. And we talk about family. There was a family out there, and it was the original bar name was Carrie's Sports Bar. And it was a family, and they were commingling tips. And it was you can fill in the blanks, even though I could swear I'm not going to, but it was an S show. And they turned themselves into the Bacon Bar. So let's hear from Justin from the Bacon Bar.
Hey, everyone. This is Justin from the Bacon Bar. Since our show aired, we've doubled our numbers. We have such a huge fan base that comes in on literally a daily basis. We get people from New York, obviously, Maine, everywhere, Texas. And you know what? The show has been just such a blessing for us because before it was called Carrie's Sports Club, and people used to drive by it all the time and, you know, not really pay any mind. And the second that we changed the name to the Bacon Bar, you know, it's so catchy that once you drive by, you automatically are going to come, and once we get you in, we're going to keep you because we have, you know, great customer service, and it's just, like I said, it's been such a blessing. Double our numbers, like I said, and we're just trying to expand now. You know, we're thinking about doing a food truck, you know, a couple of other things. So, again, thank you guys for watching the show. I'm so glad you guys liked the episode, and please, if you guys are ever in Vegas, please stop down and come hang out with us for a little while.
So that was Justin. He was such a nice guy, and he's, when he comes out on the East Coast, Katie, I told him he has to look us up, and he's going to. So that, you know, we talk about families, that's one of the ones that I think is really, really good. I thought that was another one of my favorite shows.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I want to go there so bad.
Well, I just find it weird when you have bacon in a drink. Does that seem a little weird?
No, that's not weird at all. That's a huge thing now.
Really?
Yes, bacon vodka with bacon stirs. Well, in Baltimore, we've always done bacon and Bloody Marys. So maybe we were just, you know, ahead of everyone else.
Remember, this is also the guy who doesn't drink, so I'm like, oh, really?
Right, that's why I'm helping you out here.
Oh, listen, okay, listen. Yeah, you are, and I should be more thankful about that. So we're going to be joined in a few minutes. We're going to have a special guest in a minute or two. And I think you guys are going to get a real good kick out of it. And here's the fun part. And here's the part that I want Katie to really help me with.
Okay.
Talk to me about what it was like meeting John for the first time.
Meeting John?
Yes, meeting John Taffer for the first time.
John Taffer. This is how I describe him, and maybe men will understand, but as a woman, if my dad was the chief of police, that is John Taffer. So he screams and yells, and he's loud, and he's scary, and then he makes the switch, and he talks to you really quietly and very intently, and he just wants to build you back up, you know, after breaking you down. And it's this whole roller coaster, but you do, like, you feel bonded afterwards with him. He, you know, I really think that he, his passion and everything that he has for the business is absolutely legitimate, and he's extremely knowledgeable. So, I mean, he could have been yelling 2 inches from my face, and I sat there with a smile on my face like a huge idiot because I was just in awe and so happy that they were there that, you know, I just took it all in.
Well, you know, we were on the discussion of family before, and one of our favorite episodes, and we were talking about this before we went on the air, and, you know, it's hard to remember some of the old names and the new names, but the most important thing for us has been making sure we get the bars and the people on here of the shows that we think that you guys want to hear from. And with that being said, one of the best episodes they did was down in North Carolina, and it was the Characters Bar. Agree or disagree? I think you and I both agreed on this.
Yes.
And we are lucky enough to have the owner of the Moonrunner Saloon, which was Characters. Guy is with us. Guy, good evening.
Yeah, how you guys?
Randy Zellia. It's Randy and Katie on the Rescue Edition of Real Sports Talk Radio. How you doing today, buddy?
Randy, I'm doing well. Katie, how you doing, hon?
Good. How are you, fellow rescuee?
I'm doing well.
Good.
So, you know, talk to us about the success you guys have had since the show aired.
Well, I'll tell you, it's been a little over a year now, and Moonrunners is certainly doing quite well. Business is hovering right around 40% up. We're currently rolling out our own line of moonshine that will be have distribution rights in all 50 states here. We teamed up with a local guy. Yeah, so it's been real exciting. It feels good to have a brand that's working. Obviously, you know, Characters was different, to say the least. So to have these guys come in and give us a brand that we feel real confident about and you know, obviously moving towards, you know, another location probably within the next 8 to 12 months. You know, rolling out the whole line of moonshine, it's been real exciting. It's like I say, you know, Bar Rescue is the gift that keeps on giving. Every day we have someone that comes in that's seen the show, seen the repeat, and it's been amazing of how many people we've met from all over the place.
That's awesome.
Now, update our listeners right now on not only the relationship with your sister, because you and I spoke briefly yesterday about it, but also just with the family and how the family business has sort of grown well as well.
You know, relationship with my sister has definitely come full circle. I think one thing with John, it, you know, listening to him and him being able to come in looking at it objectively was just being able to communicate a little bit better with her rather than flying off the handle. I think it's made it easier for everybody. Obviously, Alex is not running back to mom crying that, you know, her brother's being mean. So it has certainly made the whole dynamics a lot stronger, you know. And, again, it was a process, obviously, going through it. You know, you sometimes you're able to take a step back. And like I said, someone like John coming in and really looking at it objectively and saying, hey, guy, you know, I think you can do this better and you'll get a better, reaction, or you'll get a better result from your sister from it. So it certainly is, it's good. It really was like a therapy session doing Bar Rescue because, again, you get caught up in the minutia, and obviously with characters not being as successful as we would have liked it to have been, you get caught up in that rut, and it puts a lot of stress on everybody. And, you know, thankfully with Moonrunners now, you know, we are debt-free, currently just got done paying off, you know, the rest of the business, and we're
awesome.
In really good shape. And it feels great. It really is, you know, to be operating, you know, a successful business and people enjoying it. It's all about the customer experience. That's what I always stress to everybody, customer experience. And, you know, the team is doing a great job, and, you know, everybody's excited. And obviously, they're not in characters anymore, so they don't feel stupid.
What was the big light that went off in your head after John and the camera crew left? You said, "Wow, this is really going to work." What point did that hit you?
Well, you know, I mean, I think after the show aired, to see that the first month we did, I think it was like 60%, and then we're like, "All right, let's give this thing a few more months to really see what goes on." And then, you know, obviously, you know, it being over a year later and business just is still just moving, you know, moving in the right direction, really. You know, so, I mean, it was a little nerve-wracking because obviously, you know, any new place or, you know, being on a TV show, you're going to get that initial pop. But it's what you do with that initial pop, you know, and take the ball and run with it. And I think we've done a really good job. You know, we've created a whole moonshine menu for moontinis and, you know, mason jar cocktails, the flights of moonshine. We're doing a bunch of infusions. And it's really, you know, we tried to create that niche with characters being different, which it didn't work, obviously. And, the good thing about Moonrunners is obviously we have a niche that no one really has, especially in this area. And this is an area that, you know, moonshine, the history of moonshine, it just runs real deep, you know, from where we're at. So it's just, it's amazing. It really is. It's amazing of what, you know, these guys coming in and doing what they do. And then again, giving credit to the whole team here of taking the ball and running with it. We've been given a gift, and we've really been very pleased with the whole model brand. And, you know, I tell everybody just watch out because we'll have a few more in the next little bit here. And like I said, the line of shine coming out, there's just so much good stuff going on. It really is. It's been a blessing.
That's awesome. Do you guys have a name for the line of moonshine yet?
It's going to be Moonrunners Line of Shine. So we're coming out with some flavors. We are hopefully by the end of the year, because there's a little bit of a process for that. We're going to be coming out with our own in-house apple pie. We're going to be coming out with our own, like, kind of fireball moonshine. And we're also going to be looking to come out with some type of punch because, you know, no one has that on the market right now. Obviously, everybody has the apple pie, but that's just something that's going over real well that we've come up with, and it's just probably our number one cocktail right now. You know, obviously, all the cocktails that Bar Rescue created were good as well, but we just, like I said, we've taken the ball and ran with it. It's been amazing.
So, now, Guy, let's also bring up the fact, again, you're from New York, and you told me, correct me if I'm wrong, you're a Jets fan, right?
I'm torture Jets fan. Let's get that right.
Because, you know, Katie's a Ravens fan, so, you know, I know there's a little bit of...
Well, yeah, we got Rex Ryan, you know, who used to be the defensive coordinator for the Baltimore, you know, Ravens, which, you know, I'm pleased with Rex Ryan. But I won a championship, man. I'm losing years off my life already here.
That's, you know what, yeah, that's sort of true. You know, me being a Giant fan, I have two rings to show for it in my
life. You got the glory.
I got four Super Bowls in my lifetime. I'm happy. Last couple questions here for you, you know, Guy. Talk about also the like Katie told us about her experience filming. What about your experience filming? How nerve-wracking was the actual experience? And also explain to the audience what you told me yesterday about your cook after the show aired.
Oh, yeah. I mean, the whole process, obviously, leading up to, like, is John walking through, is John not walking through, to John actually walking through, it was all nerve-wracking because, you know, we were fans of the show way before we got it. So, you know, when you watch these shows, you don't have an expectation. You don't really know what to think. So now that you're in the thick of it, you got lights all over the place. John's, you know, his Tahoe's outside. You're going, oh my God, this is actually coming to fruition. You're like, what is gonna happen? So, you know, the first moment he walks in to the back, and that whole dynamics with me, my sister, the family, it was really intense. And I wasn't expecting that. And obviously, I'm the hothead, and that's how they portray me, which I am. I'm fiery. But so it was just like, wow, like how, you know, the reaction to it, and obviously just, you know, the day-to-day in and out of filming all day. And for me, I had to come in the morning and do my orders and stuff like that. These guys are telling me, you can't be here. I'm like, well, who do I leave a check with? It was really cool in one way, but like I said, it was very like, wow, how is the show going to come out? How are we going to be portrayed? You know, so again, you know, the whole process, it was real fun, but it was grueling. I mean, you know, the hours that you put in, like I said, you know, what is it, over 150 hours of filming for a 42-minute show. And you don't know really what it's going to, you know, they don't give you any, like, you know, they don't give you a copy to say, hey, this is what it's going to look like. It's like, hey, you got to wait with everybody else to see how this is going to turn out. So, you know, it was nerve-wracking. It really was. Like, I always tell people, we got our fame and shame at the same time, you know. So, it was great. I mean, dealing with John was cool. I mean, obviously we had moments, and, you know, there was moments internally with the family. But, again, I think it was therapeutic in one way because, you know, you got to have people look at your dynamics from the outside in. And, again, you get caught up in the minutiae. You don't see it. So, you know, to have someone sit there and tell you things that maybe you don't want to hear, but you obviously got to go, all right, this guy's got plenty of experience in what he does and his team. I mean, you got to open your ears a little bit and pay attention, you know. And I think we did as a unit, as a family. You know, I think we're better off today for it, you know.
Well, Guy, listen, we appreciate you, you know, giving us a few minutes tonight. I really do. I really think it's great that you took a few minutes to speak with us. And listen, I told you, when I have the opportunity to get down there this summer, I'm with you. I'm going to be down there. I definitely want to see you. I'm looking forward to it.
Please do. I know you said you don't drink, but you're going to have to try some moonshine, my friend, you know? Well, I appreciate the time, man. This has been real fun. And, you know, everybody come check us out if you're in town. We have, you know, Facebook, Twitter, moonrunnersaloon.com, and, you know, we got a lot going on. So I really appreciate it, guys.
No, thank you very much for coming on. We appreciate it.
Excellent.
Awesome.
You guys have a good night, all right?
Thank you.
You too.
Thanks.
Awesome. He's such an awesome guy.
No, and that is awesome. I'm over here salivating over moonshine the whole time, though. That's all I can think about now.
that's why you want to know moonshine. That's great.
Yeah, I'm from Bum Wherever, Maryland. We know moonshine.
Well, you know, it's funny too with that episode. That was one of those ones where you felt like, you know, seeing the family come together is awesome. Like you look, you know, you almost felt like little teary eyed.
Oh yeah, the brother and sister dynamic. I feel like you don't get to see it that often. I feel like you see a lot of the husband and wife duos, but I feel like you don't get to see siblings, especially that young. Like, I thought, wow, he's really young to have a bar. So it was very cool to see them make up and everything.
Well, yeah, and by the way, for those who want to know, Chef Ryan Duffy is going to be with us literally in seconds.
Woo-hoo!
In fact, he's with us right now.
Yeah.
Our good friend Chef Brian Duffy is on the line with me and Katie Hutchison. Chef, it's Randy Zelia, Katie Hutchison here, Real Sports Talk Radio, the Rescue Edition. Welcome to the show, my friend.
What's going on, guys?
It's always a pleasure to talk to you, my friend. And we also have another friend on the phone who really, really wanted to come on and say hello, and in his words, bust your chops a little bit. And he is your good friend from Spirits of the Bourbon. Steve is with us.
Ooh, my favorite.
Hey, what's going on, brother? How are you?
So, Duffy, you're on with Steve as well.
What's up, Steve? How are you, man?
Oh, Brad's here. I don't know where Steve's at.
Uh-oh.
I'm a lot better looking.
Yeah, what's going on, Brad? How are you, man? It was good talking to you today.
Yeah, me and Duffy got to be good buddies. He wasn't on my show, but I'm not afraid to call him to mooch some advice off him here and there.
That's, you know, it's right. Literally, I'm not even kidding you guys. Like 2 hours ago, Brad and I were texting each other because a good buddy of mine is down in New Orleans, and Brad and I we go back and forth. I mean, you know, at least once a week, there's something going between us. So, and again, we weren't even on the same episode together.
I know, that's crazy. That's,
so wait, so that how does that work?
Well,
how does it work?
No, like how did you guys meet?
Yeah, how did you guys meet if you guys weren't on the same episode?
Well, I mean, I was in New Orleans after I taped the Gotta Go, the Brothers episode with the boys down at TJ Quill's. So I was down there at that point, but I don't think Brad and I met until,
Vegas.
No, I don't even remember, man. Seriously, I met him in New Orleans. How the hell am I going to remember? I was in New Orleans.
I think actually the first time we ever met when we were in Las Vegas for the nightclub show. The nightclub.
Yeah,
Arlington.
Yeah, that's what it was right after that, yeah.
And we just kind of hit it off.
Isn't that cute?
Well, you know what? You know what it is? when you meet successful operators, and, you know, for me, when I meet the successful operators, especially the guys from the show, there's relationships that are built from it. You know, I mean, you look at the episode that those guys did, they are the epitome of what to do after the show. It's that simple. You know, when I would tape my episodes, and I did, I think, 22 episodes on the show, when I was done with them and people would say to me, you know, shit, you know, Duff, what do we do? How do we handle this? And I'd say, follow what Spirits did. They took the whole thing and they ran with it. It's that simple. Because it started off, I mean, Brad, your episode was explosive. You went right back at Taffer. Steve went right back at Taffer, and you guys were like, don't talk to me that way. That's not the way it is. But you guys grabbed that, and nobody knew how that episode was going to turn out. I didn't even know how it was going to turn out. I don't think Taffer knew how it was going to turn out. But the way that you guys went back at him and then it turned, there was such an awesome dynamic that quickly turned where you guys were like, you know what? We're going to embrace this, and we're going to rock and roll with it. And I think a lot of that had to do with the vessel, with the cup that you guys did with the skull and a lot of that, because that was a turning point for you, Brad, because you were like, look, I'll believe you if you come up with a better cup than what I had.
Yeah, and I wasn't going to settle for anything less. And at the end of the day, he respected me for that. And
absolutely.
And I was like, I felt like I was one of the most innovators in that cup business. And I felt like at some point I designed a cup before that took on Pat O'Brien and destroyed it, became the most popular thing on the street. It was hard for me to let go of that, but I did. And I had John there. I was like, man, I got this guy. I got the number one guy in the industry that's a champion of mine. And when I listened, I watched him. He would listen to what I said. His eyes would get big. He would move closer. So he wasn't ignoring what I was saying.
Right.
And I respected that. He would take what I had to say and clean it up where it wasn't so cloudy. And it meant a lot to me.
Yeah. That was an awesome episode, man. I really loved that. And I think that, you know, when we had met in New Orleans or in Vegas and talked, and, you know, again, we've become friends since. I mean, I talked to Steve this afternoon, and, you know, I mean, we've gone back and forth, but it comes down to, I mean, I have a respect for you guys because of what you've done, and I use you guys in my daily business. I mean, I've got a consulting business. I've got 70 clients throughout the world, and I literally say to them all the time, like, take what these guys are doing. You've got to find your niche. Find your niche and focus on that. You know, it's such a simple – it's a simple business to run because agreeing with Taffer is very simple. It's about creating – an experience. It's about creating an environment that's around you that people want to come into. And if you're bored and you're stale and all of that, people aren't going to want to come into your place. You guys have created an excitement. And, you know, the tools were given to you in the beginning. And it's not like the show stayed around for 10 days, 2 weeks, 3 months, a year and showed you what to do. They said, look, do this and run with it. And that's what it is.
And you got to realize, like, brilliance and insanity are just an inch apart. And you got to be afraid. You can't be afraid to throw it out there. You have to have something that will make you totally different than everybody else.
Absolutely.
And the one thing that you'll learn about this, people think that excellence is some godlike thing out there. At the end of the day, excellence is within all of us. You decide what you want to do, and the rest of it's like water. It gets out of the way, and you will succeed. Every day you choose to be the best at what you do, and you will not fail. So,
well, and you know what, and there's something to be said about failing at something. There's something to be said because failing is making a mistake, but you're not repeating that mistake over and over again. You know, if you continuously do the same thing, it's been said year after year, the definition of insanity is doing the same thing every single day and expecting a different outcome. You know, if I wake up every single morning and step on a tack next to my bed, and I go to bed at night and go, boy, I really hope I don't step on that tack tomorrow morning. Well, guess what? At some point, I'm going to wake up and go, I got to move this goddamn tack. You know? I mean, that's what it comes down to. So, but I mean, you know, there's a lot of great operators out there that just haven't gotten the idea of what to do. They fight the system, they buck it. You know, I say, look, run your operation for 3 months after the show airs. If it doesn't work for you, then do your own thing again. Go for it and go and do it. You know, Brad, you made changes to your business that because you had to. You made some changes that were on the show that worked out for you guys. You know, you have to. It's not like, I mean, look, we're not all pirates, okay?
Yeah.
You can't turn a pirate bar into a corporate bar and grill and expect it to work.
Yeah.
Okay?
Right.
They're doing the same thing, though, because they're literally milking the system because they're making money off of what happened to them on the show. They've got T-shirts with Taffer on them that they're burning in effigy, and they've got things that they do that kind of, you know, buck the system of the show, and they've got people that show up at their front door because they were on the show.
Right.
There's ways to do it.
Now, guys, I want to really quick, Brad, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't expecting you to call in. I'm going to invite Steven to join in the conversation because he's here too. So you have both of you guys here. So this is
so
pretty
a jackpot.
Yeah, I'm shocked.
Is this a number to order the stuffed burgers? The stuffed burger stuff?
Yes.
I mean, don't make fun of stuffs, baby. Don't make fun of stuffs.
I'm giving you a quick plug right off the bat, Brian.
I know, seriously. Stuffs is paying for my next trip to New Orleans so I can afford my bar tab with you guys.
Come down and stuff with some of those macaroni and cheeseburgers you have on there. We'll be eating them up.
You know, the funny part about that thing is the fact that, you know, when I first got it, I played with it. But I'll tell you what, man, I have clients all over the world now. I have that thing in restaurants all over the world, and it is a riot. So, but we're not here to talk about that.
I believe
that
we've... Yeah.
All right. Why not throw a plug in for it, Brad? Why not? It's a free opportunity to do it.
All right, man, hey, feel free. The thing is called Stuffs, STUFC. It's literally a burger presser. It's an awesome piece of equipment. You know, the goal was to sell a million of them, and I think they're hitting upwards towards four million right now. It has become the ShamWow of the food business. It's an absolute riot. When my daughters walk into Rite Aid and they first go to the scene on TV, I get pictures of it all over the world. If you buy one, do me a favor, man. Send me a picture of what you did with it because I'm going to create something with it someday. I had a guy the other day who tweeted me a picture of a gold. He called it a surf and turf, and it was actually stuffed with goldfish, with the cracker goldfish. Man, more power to these people. Have a field day and do it.
I'll tell you. Sometimes I think I go to sleep with Brian Duffy. I fall asleep with the NFL Network on, and I wake up and there's this commercial on TV late at night.
Dude, I had a friend of mine who literally texted me today, and she's like, I had been thinking about you a lot lately because I haven't talked to you. She said, but the best part was I woke up around 3 this morning, and you were talking to me, telling me about how great it was, how insanely good it is, and how deep that cup was.
Now, you know, Brian, you did a lot, obviously, like you said, 22 episodes of Bar Rescue. And, you know, Steve and Brad, you know, Steve, we spoke briefly yesterday about how your episode is one of the most popular episodes of the show. You know, Brian, you can give a different perspective from being from the expert side, but talk about the challenges from both ends. I'll start with Steve and Brad, and Brad will start with you, about being in this situation where you have to be okay with changing your business model.
I've been seeing Tapper for about 10 years because I've owned several nightclubs. I own three now. And I would always go watch him, and I was always intrigued with him when he'd speak because he's phenomenal at what he does. And it's, people don't realize how good of a public speaker he is. And when he came in there was very few people that I thought were at my tier of coming from nowhere and becoming successful. And I respected him. And so I gave him a shot.
that's how that's the only reason I really did, because if not, I don't think I would have sat there and listened to it, because I'm pretty stubborn. I usually think I'm right anyway.
And how about you, Steve?
Yeah, well, you know, it's very difficult, you know, because the transition itself, you know, you basically hand over the keys to your car to somebody that you've never seen before other than on TV and his staff, and tell him, listen, go ahead and do whatever you want to this place, and I'll close my eyes for a couple days and come back and see what you come up with. And it's very difficult when you first see it, whether the changes are good or not, because you know what you put into the other place, whether it's good or bad. You know, maybe you were working, you know, towards the wrong things and doing some of the wrong things, but for me and Brad, we were still working hard. You know, we were busting our butts there trying to make it happen and banging our head against the wall, and obviously going the wrong direction in a lot of ways. But you know, so to have somebody come in and overnight change everything, you know, it's a difficult transition. But the biggest thing I think John did for us was changed our attitude about our business. You know, he forced me personally to get up every day and look in the mirror and decide what I need to do every day to make my business better. You know, because at the end of the day, you know, you might be in a bad economy, you might be in a bad location, but none of those things matter. There are good bars in bad economies. There are good bars that are in bad locations. But at the end of the day, the only one that's going to fix your place is you. And I think John, the biggest thing he did was make us realize that, make us wake up every day, and really, really we're a lot better, you know, operators for it.
And Brian, what about from the expert side of, you know, having to, you know, I don't want to say convince, but try to get them to understand that they are doing right now is not working.
You know, this business that we're in, the restaurant world, the bar world, one of the main reasons why people get into it is really it's an homage to themselves. You can talk all the bullshit that you want to talk, and you can say all the stuff that you want to. Sorry, I didn't mean to curse on the radio. I have a
oh, it's
a
perfectly
chef,
fine.
Yeah. All right, game on. you know, this is a business, and I'm not talking about your fine dining restaurants, and I'm not talking about your. I'm talking about the bars, the bar world. It's an homage to the owner. That's what it is. Okay, I say to my owners all the time, the guys that I deal with, I do a tremendous amount of consulting. So you guys know, to give you an idea, I've opened 9 restaurants in the last 10 weeks, somewhere around there, 7 in the 8 in the last 7 or 7, who knows how many it is. I'm so confused. I don't even know what city I'm in right now. What it comes down to is that I have to deal with owners all the time who say to me, well, you know, I keep trying to run this and I keep trying to do that and I keep trying to do this. And I said to a guy about a year ago, how old are you? He said, I'm 53. I said, you're a 53-year-old man trying to run specials for a bar crowd that's 21 to 28 years old. You have no idea what you're doing. You have no idea what you're talking about. You have no idea what it is that they want. And he literally fought me about it back and forth. So what did we do? We sat back and we started to talk about it. And I said, your staff is your demographic. Your staff is your demographic. So what do? We sat down with the staff. We did a 3-hour marketing session with them. We did a 3-hour powwow where we talked to them about what it was like to own a restaurant. If it were your restaurant, what would you do to run it? How would you change things? What would you do differently? And the guy finally got the idea of what I was trying to show him, is that he had no idea what he was talking about when it came to the marketing aspect of the business, because he was trying to run specials as a 53-year-old guy trying to get in 21 through 28-year-old, you know, women. In reality, what is that? That's a pedophile. Okay, that's what that guy is. He's the guy who's trying to get a little kid to come into on the front porch. So what we did was we stood back and we let the staff come up with specials for 30 days, and his business changed around. And he understood what I was talking about. So to try and tell somebody that has put their entire life savings into a business, somebody who has taken everything that they have and put it into a business, and to have to listen to somebody else is not an easy thing to do. So, you know, when we talk about it, when we go into the restaurants and we're there for 5 days and we only have a certain amount of time and we have to get loud about things and we have to, you know, we have to kind of try to run through people, it's the way that it works. You know, you're taking people that don't want to listen to anybody else. And in my business, what I say to people all the time is I don't search out clients. If somebody wants help, then they're going to come to me and they're going to find me. I don't do marketing. I don't do advertising, because this is the restaurant business. If I come into your restaurant and tell you there's a problem with your restaurant, you're going to tell me to go screw myself. But if you call me and you say there's something wrong with my restaurant, then the first step is there. The first step is admitting that there's a problem. So luckily, we've worked with some of those people. And if you look at a guy like Brad, if you look at a guy like Moonrunners, and with all of those guys down there, if you look at Black Sheep in Cincinnati, who are unbelievable. I talk to those guys all the time now. If you look at Handlebar up in Connecticut, you know, Betsy just texted me today. Steph wants to hop on the show. She wants me to call in right now. You know, if you listen, watch those people, they knew that there was a problem, and they're successful. So,
I personally, Katie and I were just talking, like, while you guys were talking, we're on Facebook communicating with each other. This is how we're handling this. Because she's out in Baltimore. I'm up in New York and New Jersey area. And this is like, for us, this is Bar Rescue Heaven right here, because you have the two owners, who I think the two of the most successful owners from the show, and you have one of the best experts on. It's awesome. And here's, for me, this is a question for someone who's not in the bar business. I don't drink at all. But, you know, I appreciate, you know, good food, because Brian's obviously the best chef in America, and I'm very good with business. You know, I guess my question for Brad and Steve, the cup thing, you know, we saw you come back up to New York, the New York area for Bungalow Bar, you know, when that had to get redone. How difficult is it to, okay, now here's the new concept, to market it and say, what are we going to do a little different now that we have this great new product? Yeah, we have a TV show. Was the orders and was the crazy business too much? Were you guys overwhelmed at all with all this?
At the end, when you first come on, you forget what you said and what all really happened, because it happened so fast, and you're filming all day and all night, and it gets cloudy, and you get mad at each other. But at the end of the day, he just gives you basically a framework of how a success, and it's up to you to make it work for you, and to change it. You can keep the basic concept, but you got to change it and make it work for you. And another thing people don't realize, when they come in here, they come in before, and they do listen to the owners. Because if they didn't, it wouldn't work. Because you know more about your business than they ever will. And they take the little things that you're not operating correctly and make them work for you. So after the show, you're still in shock, and you're hoping it works. But you have to wake up and choose to believe in it and to try the system. And anybody that does it, I call almost everyone that does the show calls me afterwards. I say, do it for 6 months after it airs, and I promise you, if you follow the procedures, you will be very successful. This is the best reality show you can ever go on. It's not like going on Survivor and there's only one winner. Once you're on this show, you've already won.
Absolutely.
You've already won. You've got the ticket. The lucky ticket is in your hand. My goal after the show was to have the golden ticket. I wanted to walk out of there and be the most successful bar rescue that they've ever had. And when they talk about it, I want them to talk about me. And that was my main objective, and I did my best to try to do that, and I've been happy with everything in there and everything that they did, and they still do for me. And it's been 2 years later.
And I'll tell you, as far as being a little bit overwhelmed about the business right offhand, you know, I don't know if you know, but the actual skull cup that they used on the TV show wasn't the one that we actually ended up with now quite exactly. We did one very similar to that, but it took months from the time the show aired until the time we actually got these new cups in. And really, once the show aired, I mean, the response to that cup was unbelievable. And we were working with John and with the show for months trying to get this cup, and they come from China, and it's a whole long process about getting these cups and getting enough in. But I remember the morning after the show aired, our phone was ringing off the hook, our website crashed, people wanted these skull cups. And it took several months from the time the show aired until we actually had enough cups in our hands to sell to as many people as they wanted them. And the beginning time was very difficult to walk around and tell these people, listen, I just drove in from, you know, Iowa or something to get the cup I saw on the show. And we didn't have them, and it was a long process. But even John and the people of the show were involved in ordering the cups, and he even went to bat for us a couple times on Facebook and Twitter and everything, saying, look, these guys are doing everything they can. The staff from the show is doing everything they can to get these cups in. But it was just it was overwhelming. We had no idea, you know, the response to, you know, we knew there would be a huge response to the show and to everything about the bar. But I mean, people wanted these cups. They were like, it was like they were crack. These blinking blue skull marks. It was unbelievable. So
I want one.
Right.
I want one.
Come on down, bro.
I want one. Forget the stuff. I'm trying.
So it took us a while, but now we even have a warehouse that holds just the cups for us down here in New Orleans, because it's been that kind of reaction to these skull mugs that everybody came up with. So, yeah, we did
wow.
have a little bit of transitional stage right after the show trying to get these cups in. It was pretty amazing.
And Spirits
wow.
on Bourbon, the Spirits on Bourbon, the website, it's to the point now we have a full-time employee that just does mails out cups and T-shirts. So it actually gave us a whole other business of revenue that we never had before. And that was something that was a great surprise. And we milked that and to get as much money out of that still to this day, where every day we're shipping out cups and T-shirts because people have just gravitated to us through
yeah.
that show.
That's awesome. Hey, Stephen Brad, I have a quick question for you guys.
Mm-hmm.
Well, first of all, I want to say, from a fellow rescuee, my favorite episode of all time. I honestly wish you guys had been my owners. Then my bar would still be open. But, okay, so my question, obviously, yes, it's crazy to wait and wait and then have your episode air. And I know there's parts on my episode that I wish hadn't made the cut, and then there's parts that I... you know, things that we experienced that didn't make the cut. So I'm wondering if there's those moments for you guys after seeing your episode that you wish had made the episode but didn't.
I was pretty happy with the editing of it. I mean, the other day I knew I was going to probably come across a little crazy, but I said, well, I called my Paul up and I was like, I go, they got the show, I think I can make some money off this thing, but I'm probably going to look like a jackass. And he goes, boy, sometimes you gotta play the jackass to eat the hay. So I just did it, and I was grateful with it, and I really don't have any regrets on it at all. And instead of being crazy, now I've made enough money that I'm eccentric. So that's pretty cool.
That's the greatest. There, dude.
I was pretty happy with it. I think for a reality show, the biggest thing you can say about it is that, to me, it was fair. You know, they take 7 days
Absolutely.
Worth of footage. They take 7 days worth of footage, and you really, you don't, you know, I don't know if you mentioned this earlier, but you don't get to see it any sooner than anybody else does. And they
exactly.
could have taken that 7 days of footage, and believe me, those few times that they showed me and Tapper getting into it, that wasn't the only times we did it, that's for sure. And then the biggest regret I have, there was one small piece where I got mad at Brad for about 30 seconds, and it was the only time me and Brad worked together for about 20 years now that I got mad at him. I wish that didn't make the show. But Tapper kind of puts you in that kind of situation sometimes. But for me, I thought it was fair, and they take a lot of footage, and they can go any way with it. And for me and Brad, the first time we saw it was we actually had a viewing party at the bar. So that was kind of difficult because you don't know what the heck you're about to see, and you know they take a lot of footage with a lot of bad stuff in it. And,
exactly.
You know, we were kind of watching it sitting there with, like, one eye open and one eye, you know, ready to run out the door depending. We were there with all of our closest friends and family and everything, and we didn't know how it was going to go. So when the hour was over, we were pretty relieved, I think, about how it turned out.
I felt the same way.
There was a pretty good part where he would, like, yell at me, and I'd start laughing. And he was like, what is wrong with you? Why do you, like, laugh when I yell? I go, dude, my mother hated me from the day I was born and yelled at me every day. I go, that don't work with me. I just think you're crazy when you do that. And he just had this big shit-eating grin after that. And so he's like, okay, that doesn't work for him, which was pretty funny.
He must have thought it worked pretty good on me because he yelled at me for a good portion of the week.
Yeah. Steve and Brad, I have a question for you. How did you guys react when John called you guys to come up to New York to help out with the Hurricane Sandy rescue?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, we jumped all over that. I think Brad had mentioned to him that we wanted to help on an episode when we saw him in Las Vegas. And so this was a perfect opportunity. I'm originally from New Jersey. So I had a lot of people that were affected, friends and family that were affected by Hurricane Sandy. And I think originally they were talking about doing that show on the Jersey Shore. It ended up being in Rockaway and in Long Island in New York. But the minute, you know, for us, the minute he called to have an opportunity to do that, we were all over it.
And I felt good because he was letting me kind of run with what I wanted to bring and stuff like that, and he was kind of letting me show what I could do, like, you know, with the shirts, he let me design and the cuffs, with the flashing cuffs and with the drinks. So I was pretty honored that the number one guy in the business had enough belief in me to even trust me to do that. So that was an honor for me to do it. And at the end of the day, John, for us, hasn't left our life. I mean, he still calls and checks on us. I talk to him probably once a week still, and if I called him right now, he would answer his phone. And to have a guy of his magnitude on your side, you don't have to make, like, I have a big idea, you know, everybody's telling me it's crazy, I can call him and he'll tell me if it's crazy or it's brilliant. And I don't have to make $50,000, $100,000 mistakes anymore because I have a guy that gets what I do and he controls it. You know, he controls my madness. And I'm very grateful for that.
Me too.
Now, God.
Steve's had to steal some of those $50,000.
I've been trying to control his madness for quite some time now.
Well, guys, again, this was originally going to be planned just to have, you know, really Steve on for a couple minutes with Duff, and we were going to go over a whole bunch of things with Duffy. That sort of has now sort of, in a way, sort of spiraled out of control because we have on the line who just called in Steve from the Bungalow Bar. Just joined us.
Oh, there you go.
So,
it's actually
shit, I should hang up now.
It's Sean Tubby from the Bungalow Bar.
So, Sean, I'm sorry, Sean.
Yeah, no problem.
No respect, Sean.
No respect. I'm one of the brothers that owns the Bungalow Bar with our partner Ryan, and you know, with these guys, big, you know, Steve and Brad coming up, it was just to be a part of something. Number one, it was surreal. It's just incredible. I mean, you can't even put it into words, you know, how powerful their message was coming from the South, from New Orleans, someone that was affected by you know, Katrina and so forth and so on. And we had our own Katrina up here, not of that magnitude, but it certainly felt like, you know, for the lower part of Queens where we are in Rockaway Beach. And we weren't the only ones, Jersey Shore, Long Island, Connecticut, these places were affected as well, and we were lucky. I mean, it was a long shot to begin with, and we got really lucky, and we're forever grateful. I really wanted to report, you know, because I saw that it was going on Twitter and everything like that. You know, our record last year, I think we did 760 covers one night. This wasn't okay for you guys, but Memorial Day Sunday and Monday, we smashed that record, you know, both days in a row. Granted, that's on Memorial Day, but still, there's some numbers like in our size and do Manhattan numbers like that. It's just incredible.
That's awesome.
So we have that success. We owe that success really to the show and to Don and Steve and everyone that helped us. You know.
Well. You know, Sean, I really, you know, we appreciate you, you know, taking a few minutes to come on. And, you know, Brad and Steve, you know, you were there for this rebuilding process, too. How much off-camera were you guys involved with helping the rebuild with them?
Well, we started rebuilding the bar in mid-December, as far as, like, we put everything to the side as far as business was concerned because families were affected first, and we needed to get families back in their homes. Number one, my family. I live in an apartment in Rockaway, but we were still affected. I mean, we didn't have heat, we didn't have gas, we didn't have electric. They're basic necessities for the better part of a month. And you know, my brother Dan and my parents, all their businesses were affected. My brother was out of his house for, you know, 2 months, almost 3 months, actually. But when we started just demoing, and we didn't really have a plan of what it was going to cost us or, you know, what a budget looked like or anything like that. And we wound up getting in over our heads because mm-hmm. just the destruction was so unfathomable, I guess is the best word, overwhelming, you know. And when we had, we set the budget, we exceeded the budget, and we ran out of money. And just in the nick of time, you know, that's when Taffer showed up. John showed up with his team, and it really got us over the finish line. And that was a week before Memorial Day, and that's no, there's nothing fictitious about the show, you know. Like they definitely, everything to me was real. And as far as the rebuilding part, we had a shell of what it looked like before, after, you know, like it looked nothing like it after. We couldn't get to where John brought us, is what I'm trying to say. He definitely blew our minds, exceeded our expectations. But as far as the construction process, we had nothing to do with it. We basically handed him back to what we were able to put together, and he gave us something so much better. You know what I mean?
Oh, Sean, we definitely appreciate you giving us a few minutes, and Chef, we're going to ask you to hang on for a minute. Brad and Steve, thank you guys so much for coming on. This
yes,
has been a lot of
you.
Fun and so unexpected with all you guys coming on. It was great, and I'm planning on making some sort of trip down to New Orleans, and if any of you guys make it up here to New York, New Jersey area, we all have to get together, and the drinks will be on Katie.
And have a drink.
So
definitely stop and say hello.
Most of us.
So, you know, Brad,
always
you
good
show.
To hear from you guys too, man.
Hey, Duffy,
yeah,
still owes
to
what's that?
Hey, Duffy still owes us a meal for the Saints beating the Eagles in the playoffs.
Dude, you got to talk to the mayor, man.
I
got to talk to my mayor. Come on, mayor. Yeah, come on, man. I'm doing my best to get down there. All I got to do is sell another 500,000 stuffs, and I'm down there, dude. It pays for the flight.
I'm ordering one right now.
Let's consult.
Yeah, exactly. Well, I'll see you guys. I'll be down in the next couple months, man. I promise.
All right, take care.
All right, buddy.
Hey,
Sean,
you guys are all, you're all welcome at Bungalow
Ryan,
Bar.
Take care.
You're all welcome at Bungalow. We'll even have
see
a place for you to stay. No problem.
I'm afraid of the Bungalow Bar. I got too drunk there last time I was over there.
Yeah, I think you might have fell asleep in the grass. I don't know if that was you or not. All right, guys. Take care. Thanks so much for your time.
I passed
Thank
by
you.
It on Sunday when I was riding with the family and decided not to go in yet. I'm going to go in on that one when I'm not with the family.
I'm afraid of the Tabridi brothers. Every time I'm with them, even talking on the phone, I feel like I'm going to get ready to get drunk.
I keep bail money when I'm with them. I put it in the booth. I got enough money to get bailed out of jail.
Same here, Brad. Good people. Great experience, really.
We'll let you get to Duffy. Well, thank you kindly for having us on.
Oh, thanks, guys,
very
much.
Absolutely. It was a blast.
Come on down to Spears
yeah, same
on
here.
When you're in New Orleans.
Randy, thank you. Thanks a lot.
Guys,
thanks,
Brad,
guys.
Brad and Steve and Sean, I'll reach out to all of you guys. I'm really thankful you guys came on. Thank you so much.
Yes. Okay.
Absolutely.
On Twitter.
Cool. Take care. Bye.
Right.
Bye.
So, Chef.
Yeah.
Now back to our original.
It's just at three now.
Now back to our originally scheduled program.
Hey, that's the best part. That's the best part about radio, man. Especially when you get a group of guys or a group of people together that all have big personalities. It's fun. That's what made the show a good time.
It's
yeah,
so
you
fun.
Know, you know what? And I'll tell you something. We spoke about how this whole thing came together in the beginning of the show. I don't know if you got to hear it or not, but this whole thing happened because of you. Like, you know, I wanted to interview you, and during that interview, we talked about the Murphys episode, and you pointed me over to Katie. And
yeah.
Katie, you know, I'm going to sing Katie's praise here for a minute or two. And, you know, Katie has started working with us over at Back Sports page, and I don't know if you saw her article that she did. It was amazing, and it's gotten great
yeah,
reactions to
I
the
did.
Point where the Ravens were calling me about her.
Oh, that's awesome.
So,
I know,
so
what a connection.
so technically, Duffy, this is all your fault.
Yeah, well, you know what? I'm cool with this. I will totally take the blame. You know, Katie and I have we've been friends ever since the show. You know, I mean, we had a good connection when we were down there, and you know, Katie was she's a sweetheart. I mean, that's what it comes down to. She's a great girl. She's somebody that I, you know, that's one of the things I wanted. The hardest part about the show for me when I did it was the people that I worked with. You know, when we were on air with them and we got to know them because, you know, we're there for 7 days. Okay, so you get to meet people, you get to talk to them, you create relationships with them. And on almost every single episode that I did, I have somebody that I talk to. Not as much as I do with Katie, because Katie and I have done things and we're doing stuff together in the future and all that. But you create relationships because there's a support system that's there because they're scared. They don't know what to expect. Now, it's a little different now. The show is a totally different show than it was for the first two seasons, okay?
Yeah.
The show's taken a big turn. It's not the same show as it was. When we were on in the beginning, when it was, you know, myself and Elaine Duff and Michael Tipps and all of those guys, you know, it was a different show. There was a genuine fear for the people that were on there because it wasn't as popular as it is now. So, Katie, when we did your show, you guys had no idea what to expect. You did not have a single idea what to expect was going to happen. You knew that it was going to be a little crazy, but you didn't know. You didn't know that Taffer was going to go in and yell at Tammy. I mean, you know, that was a whole different thing. That was the first episode that I did for that season where I said to the producers and everybody else, don't tell me anything about the people in the kitchen. Because I felt like I was kind of being led in a direction the first season. Not in a bad way. They were trying to get me aware of what was going on in the kitchen and make me aware. But it got to a point that I felt like I was being given so much information that some of my responses and some of my reactions were going to be skewed because I already knew. So I wanted to go into kitchens blind. So when I walked into that kitchen and the producer on that show, the culinary producer on that show was a woman named Sandra Topicchio. And I remember her saying to me, I think it was her, yeah, saying to me, like, I want to tell you about the kitchen. I said, don't tell me anything about it. I don't want to know. Because I wanted to go in blind. I wanted to see whether there was something dead. I wanted to see if there was something that smelled. I wanted to see if there was mouse shit in the box. So for somebody like Katie, I mean, you were a bartender. That was your livelihood. You were literally putting yourself on the line for a TV show that you knew nothing about. You know?
Right.
So it's a big kudos to you guys to go in and do that. And it takes a lot. So there's relationships that get built. You know, I still talk to people for almost every single episode that I did, whether it was Dimples in California or Murphy's in Baltimore or, you know, Moonrunners down in North Carolina. I go to Cincinnati all the time because I've got clients over there. You know, I talk to those guys all the time. I talk to Scott and Billy and Natalie all the time because they're awesome people. To watch the successes that they've done, you know, Black Sheep, they did an amazing job. You know, it's now the Public House, and they're profitable. They run a good menu. I watched Billy, the chef who was on that show, who I watched pick up cigarette butts with a cat litter scoop. That's this guy that I watched. To watch him post pictures of his food and be proud of it is something that I love to see. To know that they just won the best burger in Cincinnati, which is a burger that I put on their menu, is an awesome feat for me. I love to hear that stuff. So some of these people get it. Some of them don't.
Yeah.
You know, Duff.
Yeah, I know. I know.
That leads me into something. You know, I don't know if you've been hearing what we've been doing for the first hour of the show, but we got updates from some of the bar owners and some people from the bars, and we saved a couple from the shows that you were on. And this is one of the ones that when we did the interview, we talked about very extensively. I know a lot of people want to get a lot of updates in on some of the shows that you were on about some of the bars, but I want to play the clip first, and then I want you to give your perception of the experience of working with this bar.
Oh, shit.
This is Richard from Brew U here in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Filling everybody in on how the bar rescue's still going. We got Chef James still in the kitchen, tearing out some great food. Even came up with a few of his own items. Thanks to Chef Brian Duffy, the grilled cheeses are flying off the shelf. Having a great time selling those. They are definitely delicious. And basically, our sales continue to increase. month by month, looking forward to the fall when they will definitely probably double from last year. Get a full football season after a bar rescue team came through here. Been good so far and look forward to getting better.
Awesome.
So that was Brew U. And
wow,
that was probably one of the most explosive explosive shows that I remember watching on this since the show started. Talk about your experience with that show.
One, I'm gonna set this whole thing up very simply by the fact that I was 20 years old. I didn't know what I wanted to do. I wasn't sure about what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to get involved in something that had food to do with it because I love food and I respect it. The first day that I went to culinary school and I got a jacket that I was able to put on my body, and somebody said to me, wow, hey, look, you're a chef. Like, that was a defining moment in my life because I was, you know, when you go to an office, you wear a jacket and a tie. Nobody knows what you do. Okay? When you're a mechanic, you might have dirty hands. Somebody might have an idea. Okay? When you're a doctor, you can put a lab coat on, but nobody knows if you're a doctor, if you're a lab technician, if you're, you know, collecting blood. But when you put a chef jacket on, people know exactly what it is that you do. It's a straightforward description of what it is that you do. And that was one of the proudest days of my life because that was a day that I knew was going to define what I did for the rest of my life. So the jacket that a lot of people just take for granted means a tremendous amount to me, okay? My jackets are very simple. They say Brian Duffy on them. I might have a logo. I might have something like that. I don't need to put chef on my jackets because people know what I do by the uniform that I wear. So to walk into this kitchen and watch a guy, and I'm very passionate about what it is that I do when I'm talking about stuff like this, and to watch somebody who disrespected a career that has been so good to me, to disrespect a field that is so good to people, to treat it the way that this person did, infuriated me. It enraged me. It made me angry. Because this was a guy who, one, claimed and used the term chef very loosely when he spoke, because he was talking about himself in that way. There's something about somebody who disrespects something that you respect so deeply that just, I was enraged. I was on fire. I couldn't hold back what I wanted to do, and there's so many things in that episode that you guys did not even see. There's a point where I told the guy that if you watch the episode very closely, you'll notice that there's one scene where he's wearing a jacket, and the next scene immediately after that, he doesn't have the jacket on. And the reason why is because I told him to take the jacket off. Because he gave me salsa that he made that was bad, and I took the entire container of salsa and I literally dumped it on his chest. And I said, take the fucking jacket off because you're embarrassing me right now. And that made me angry. So that episode, man, that was the last episode that I did of Bar Rescue, just so you guys know.
Wow.
Yeah, that episode really pissed me off.
And also with, you know, just everything about it, it just seemed like it was very, that was very intense. That was a very intense episode. And I, as soon as I played the clip, I was like, I don't know how it's going to take hearing the words Brew U again.
You know, they're a very nice group of people, and that's one of the things that happens. You know, this guy had a very successful business prior to owning the bar, and the bar was literally something that he put some money into. He didn't pay attention to it. It wasn't his passion. It wasn't something that he wanted to do. He wanted to go down there and play some golf in the back room. But to do that, you know, you're allowing people to run with you're running with scissors on a daily basis. You know, everybody says don't run with scissors, but that's what you're doing. It's dangerous. We have the ability to kill people on a daily basis. That's what we have the ability to do. And the fact that nobody died because of this irresponsible jackass who was in a kitchen, who had mushrooms growing out of a walk-in, what you guys didn't see was we cleaned that kitchen almost three times.
Wow.
Oh, God.
Okay, we had food that we were pulling out of coolers because we wouldn't allow anybody into the walk-ins because the mold was so bad that I stood in a walk-in and I began to get sick. I physically began to get sick, and I'm not doing this in a dramatic way because I'm not a dramatic dude. I'm saying this very straightforward. I looked at Taffer and I was like, dude, I can't do this. This is bad. this is not good for us to be standing in this building right now. So we had bleach everywhere, and I'm allergic to bleach. Okay, we had bleach every single place that you looked. There were sanitary buckets every single place that we looked. So, you know, this episode just aired the other day, and I get so many responses because of the fact that I kept telling the guy not to touch the burger. But it just comes down to the simple fact. You know, we have the ability to kill people on a daily basis, and if we don't take that seriously, people can get hurt. You know, people want to go into a bar, they want to sit down, they want to have a drink, they want to order a burger, they want to order it, and they trust us that this thing, these are safe. They trust us. And if we break that trust, then I think you should be shot.
I totally remember this from our episode because I feel like we didn't realize that until you guys came through. And Tammy, who you know is such a sweetheart and would never do anything on purpose, you know, she she's a mother with children, so it was like to realize how serious it was and to have everyone come in and for Tapper to yell at her that way, and then, you know, but then she learned so much, and when you talked about the chef coat, it made me think of when you gave her a chef coat, and she was just so happy and so proud, and all of a sudden, you know, she had a passion for it.
Well,
and it was so,
you know,
awesome
in that respect, in that case, there's certain things of that episode with you guys that it wasn't her fault. She didn't know. She didn't know. She hadn't worked in a lot of kitchens before. Those guys, the two owners, and I mean, you know what, Katie, in all reality, I don't even remember their names. That's how insignificant those two are to me. I remember your name because you made a difference to me. You made an impact on my life by meeting you. Tammy made an impact on my life by meeting her. The two owners, I couldn't even tell you what their names are. Because there was no impact. They were passionless. They had no interest in what they were doing. The one guy was so freaked out about the fact that he was bald that he didn't want to be on camera. Okay, that's all I remember about that guy. But Tammy didn't know. And these guys hired somebody because they got her cheap and because she showed up for work every single day.
Right, exactly.
But that's irresponsible. That's like hiring a guy to pump your gas who's going to stand around with a blowtorch in his hand lit the whole day.
Right, and when people bring it up to me, even people from the show that meet me in person are saying, how could you, you know, with that kitchen being so disgusting, and it's kind of like, we all ate there. Like, that's how much we didn't know. We obviously bartended, you know, long shifts, and we ate dinner there every night. So it was, like, hard because people feel like you do it intentionally, but it's really a lot of people who are just ignorant and don't have training.
The fact that you guys didn't get sick just drives me, I can't believe it.
I think we drank enough that the alcohol killed all the bad germs.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, no, you guys did. You're absolutely right. You know, when I knew that something was dead in that kitchen because when I first walked in, I've been in enough kitchens in my life that I have seen it. I've smelled it. There's something in the air that says that there's something wrong in where you're standing, and I knew that there was something dead in there, and it was my goal to find that dead thing. And it was so bad to the point that I said to one of the camera guys, and it was the first, this was the first season, this was the second show that we had taped for this season, because Pirates was first and you guys were next.
Right.
And I remember, because it was a new camera crew that had come in, so I remember working with the guys and saying, you know, I've been on TV since 2006. Okay, so we're 2004 roughly. So you get used to working with camera crews and doing reality shows, and kitchen shows is a little different. So sometimes you work with a guy, and they're called shooters. We call them shooters. So sometimes you work with a shooter who's a camera guy who isn't 100% sure which direction, or they're really good, and you try to work with them and you try to help them as well as they're trying to help you.
Right.
So I remember looking at the camera guy and saying, there's something fucking dead in here. There's something in here that I know that I'm going to find.
I remember that.
and I remember standing there, and I started to pull. I opened up that refrigerator door, that freezer door that was duct taped shut, and I almost vomited. I almost threw up all everywhere because it literally smelled. It was a horrific smell. I can't explain. It was like somebody had taken eggs and let them sit out in the sun, and then they put them in a plastic bag, and then you took those eggs and you put them in your car, and you put them in your glove box, and then the cop pulls you over, and the first thing you do is you open the glove box, and imagine that smell, okay? That's the smell I want you to picture, all right?
It's not
That's
funny,
what it
but
smelled
it is.
Like. Yeah, and then And then, so I kept saying to the guy, there's something in here, there's something in here. So I started to get angry. I ripped the refrigerator out from behind there. I knew behind this water heater there was something, and I started sweeping and sweeping and sweeping. And then that was when I found there was a dead rat. And I'm like, get the camera over here. I'm like, get it over here right now. And I started screaming for Taffer, and I know because production had said to me they could hear me in the front of the restaurant. I'm like, Taffer, get in here. Taffer, get in here. There was a dead rat in the kitchen, and the look on the two guys' faces, it didn't change. The owner's faces didn't change. They didn't care that there was a dead rat in the corner of their kitchen that they've been serving food out of. Those guys failed, and guess what? They deserve to fail. And unfortunately, Katie and everybody that was behind that bar had to suffer because of that. But guess what, Katie? You did rock and roll, and you're doing well, so there you go.
Yeah, I've gone past the bitter stage. We're good.
Yeah, seriously.
Hey, Duff, real quick, I just want to let everybody know who is listening. We're cutting off at 10 o'clock, but hopefully Chef Nubby's going to stay with us a little longer. When the show ends, the rest of this interview will be able to be downloaded on the Real Sports Talk Radio page on Facebook and on backsportspage.com. Duffy, I want to name a few bars, if you can let us know if they're still in business and if you're still in communication with them. And what's the update? Because we had a hard time reaching out to some of these bars, and we knew that you worked with them, so we said, we'll just speak with you about them. The first one being the TJ Quills Annex. What's the state with them?
Big Rob and the boys, dude. Come on. Rob and I talk every now and then. Rob just he sent me a text message. Big Rob, everyone knows what I'm talking about, Big Rob. I can't hear you out in that,
the
world.
Scary guy.
But if you've seen this episode, you know Big Rob. And I'm going to tell you an awesome story about Big Rob in a minute. My favorite episode, my favorite scene from that show was in between two commercials. It was the first season they did this where they would throw in a couple little tidbits, a couple little teasers. And I have this episode, I have this shot saved because the Bar Rescue guys, the crew sent it to me. And what it was is I was standing in the kitchen with the boys. We're getting ready. We were kind of in the middle of a camera break. And the shot was actually from a black RoboCam that was in the top of the kitchen. And it was Rob walking into the kitchen. And I looked down at him and I looked back up. And I said to him, you're a big motherfucker, dude. And he kind of turned around and looked at me, and he's like, yeah, I know. And I said, what size shoe do you wear? And it, like, there was a quick conversation there. But what you didn't see after that was we took a break. They braked for dinner or whatever it was. And there's a picture that I have somewhere that someday I'm going to put this out. And, Rob, if you're listening right now, I want you to text it to me immediately. There's a picture of Big Rob laying in the middle of a pool table, and all of the guys that worked in the bar were laying around him with their heads on his belly. Now, this is a group of guys that have gone to school together, but it literally was like Mama Bear with the cubs. It was like Papa Bear who was taking care of everybody, and that's what Rob was. And that's what I took out of that episode was friendship. Yeah, it was a shit show. Yeah, these guys got naked, and guess what? I watched them get naked. I went drinking with these guys every single night, okay? I went to Vegas for 4 days afterwards, and I was sick the entire time I was in Vegas because I went boozing with these guys almost nightly, and I watched the shit show happen every night, and I laughed because I felt like I was one of them. Those guys are awesome. They were a great bunch of guys. They were literally given the keys to a paradise, which was a college bar in New Orleans, you know, right off of Tulane's campus, and they had a field day. They're still a great bunch of guys. They just made some bad choices. The place is still operating, though, just so you know.
Okay.
Wow, we need to get to New Orleans.
Yeah. New Orleans is crazy.
What about the Zanzibar and or the other one? That's your good buddy Omni.
Okay, so here's the very simple of it. I call this man Little Man. Across the board, I call him Little Man. I actually created the hashtag for him, specifically for him, called Little Man's Disease. This guy was one of the biggest pieces of shit I've ever met in my life. And I've met a tremendous amount of people in my life. I have traveled the world in the last 3 years. And this guy was a low life. It's how I feel about him. I watched him speak to his staff in such a degrading manner, listening to him tell his staff that they would be nothing without him, that they would be whores selling their bodies on the street if it weren't for him.
Oh, wow.
These were intelligent, beautiful, kind, gentle, caring women who listened to him berate them on a daily and nightly basis. So what happened during that episode? One of the waitresses, the black-haired waitress who was Russian, came into the kitchen, and I kind of got angry with her because she came back and told the guy that he needed to go out, and he was the cook, who needed to go out and pick up the dishes. And I said, are you kidding me? You just came back here empty-handed to tell him to go out and pick up the dishes? Get the goddamn dishes yourself. Okay? Because I was angry at that point. I didn't speak to her in a personal manner. This was a professional conversation that happened to be a little bit heated. I didn't degrade her in any way. I didn't talk about her personally. I was talking to her about the situation that was going on. So as she walked out of the kitchen, Ami started screaming at her about what a horrific piece of shit she was, and she was nothing but a whore, and she was going to mount to nothing in her life, and if she ever left his business, she was going to die up in a hole and sell her body for 10 cents a night. Who knows what she was saying. So at the same time, and this is not, nobody knows this, at the same time, one of the producers looked at me and said, you know, I heard you were kind of the man on the show. I heard you were the guy that, like, we put a camera on you and you just create content and things just happen. And joking around, he said to me, you know, I have yet to see that. So I thought to myself for a second. And then the next thing you know, Ami comes in the kitchen and he threw a whole bunch of dishes down. And I said, dude, what are you doing? So Ami and I started this entire fight. We started this whole bash that was going between us because I couldn't listen to him speak to his staff anymore. And it was making me so angry because of the way that he talked to that staff. So him and I got into a huge fight. We started yelling and screaming at each other. He starts throwing plates all through the restaurant. He walks out of the kitchen, and I turn around to the producer, and I say, we're good, right? So you get the situation with that. So the worst part about that episode was the fact that he called me a fat fuck or fat piece of shit or fat boy. Fat boy is what he called me. Well, one, this is a business where things happen. This is a business where things get said. I don't take personal attacks in a restaurant to heart because this is business. You know, I mean, you go back and forth with guys in the line that start failing on the line and everything. Earlier in the night, Ami decided that the ground beef for the burgers looked dry. So he took oil, olive oil, and added it to the ground beef mixture to the point that the new cook, who had only been cooking for him for about 6 months, who had never cooked before, didn't know what to do. So he just started forming the burgers and putting them on the grill when the orders started coming in. So the orders started coming in. Flames now start to grow higher and higher and higher on the grill because of all of this oil that's being released from the burgers. So we finally figured out what it was. Ami was the guy who put the oil in the ground beef. So the whole kitchen started to fail because of that. So during the last part of the show, or the middle part of the show, where Taffer said, hey, what happened tonight? Why did the kitchen go down? What did you do to the burgers? And he looked at me and he said, well, I thought Fat Boy was going to cover the show. But what you guys didn't see in the way that the show was kind of edited was that he had blamed me for the kitchen being that way. He blamed me for the kitchen failing. So he attacked me on a professional level, which is why I responded to him in the way that I did. So him calling me Fat Boy actually didn't even bother me as much. It was the fact that he was attacking me professionally. That's what bothered me, because he was trying to place the blame for what happened in the kitchen on me. So when he went after me in that way, and I replied back to him, and I was yelling and screaming at him, and then Taffer got involved, that was that whole thing where Taffer actually threw him up against the bar. And I'll tell you what, Ami was about 5'2", probably 115 pounds. Taffer
is... So like my size.
Yeah, yeah. Taffer's 6'4", I think.
Yeah.
Probably
yeah.
240 pounds. So it was an impressive sight to see. But there was a lot of that episode that, you know, they pulled cameras out of the episode at one point. They completely pulled the cameras off and just let the robocams go and watched. We sat in there until I think 4 o'clock in the morning watching his staff just slowly turn against him. At one point, he looked over and he's like, "Go and get me an effing cup of coffee." And the girl looked over and his cup was on one of the chairs, and she reached out with her very long Russian leg and kicked the coffee cup all the way across the room and said, "Get your own fucking coffee." And that was like a turning point.
Oh my God, I wish that had been on the episode.
That he was done. Yeah, but you know, I mean, there's only so much that you can put in, so it was it was pretty impressive. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
We also have one more clip here, and it's funny. We were talking before about the Handlebar Cafe. Katie and I had been communicating the last 2 days. Like literally, you know, Chef, we confirmed this on Tuesday. We put this whole thing together within like less than a day, and we're sitting here and we're calling some of these bars, and there were some places that just didn't want to talk to us. It was actually
really
comical. Yeah, there was
free advertising.
Yeah, free The guys down in the Florida, you know, the Tiki Bar, Frank and those guys over. Not that I'm calling them out if they're actually listening. They're like, "Why are you calling us out?" But you know, it's the simple fact, like, you know, they just like, "Well, if we're interested, we'll call you." And there was a couple other places that just never really got back to us, which was really surprising.
Wow.
But the Handlebar Cafe, I called.
And you know what though? But here, let me give a quick response to that. Notice that those guys aren't the ones that are in the media. Notice that those guys aren't the ones that are getting the business. Notice that those guys are the ones that might be up 4 or 5 or 6% because the show is on. You look at guys like Brad and Steve. You look at guys like Guy and everybody down in North Carolina. You look at the Black Sheep. You look at these shows that are successes. It's because this business is a business of being in front of people. You have to create an experience. You have to let people know that you're there. So to have something like a really cool cup that you can talk about, that in the business we can laugh about, but in the reality world and in the world that's out there, that's something that makes people come into your bar. They have a bar that's on Bourbon Street. These guys are successful because of what they're doing, because they're in the media, because they're paying attention, and because they're edgy in a lot of the stuff that they do. Guess what? The guy who was owning the Tiki Bar has probably got the same 75 to 80-year-old people sitting at his bar, you know, but they're paying a little bit more because his drinks are a dollar more. So I'm sorry to offend you there, big guys, but you should have gotten on the show.
Yeah. No, right. I don't know why anybody would turn it down.
Yeah.
With Betsy, though, it was really funny because, you know, we called her yesterday and she was doing something with her family, and 20 minutes before we went on the air, she called us, and I was like, you know what, I want to try and get this, and then she made she also sent a little message for you. It's a quick 3 minute. We're in overtime anyway. So people are gonna hit download. They'll hear this. But here's what Betsy had to say about the experience with working with you and on Bar Rescue.
Hello, this is Elizabeth Mitchell Cipriano from episode 319 of Bar Rescue, otherwise known as Betsy. We've had a great time since the crew left. It's been a year now. And there's been a lot of new faces coming from all over the U.S., Canada. We've actually had some foreign visitors. And we're trying to keep in mind everything we were taught by the crew. And we're very pleased with what the outcome of the whole show was. It was an eye-opener, but definitely one that worked out to the benefit of the bar. And currently, we had some issues at the beginning with the town and zoning issues over signage, but that's been corrected. And we're looking forward to a very busy summer. We've got a lot of stuff on the agenda, a big party in July. And I have maintained communication with Chef Brian Duffy. I'd like to give a
shout. We lost it there for a second. I apologize. But she,
hello, yeah, this
she,
is Elizabeth Mitchell.
She really, really, really loved you. And and you know, it's a simple fact of, like, that's one of those success stories that you were talking about. That they embraced,
you know,
what you guys want them to do.
One, I love Betsy and Steph and everybody that's up there. And I don't know if you guys know, but I remember, and the people that the shows that I really fell in love with, and the crews and the people and everybody, I remember their names. You know, I can throw Betsy and Steph out there on their names out because I remembered them. Because, like I said, the same about Katie. They made an impact on my life. You know, that's their bar. That was a bar that they've had for years, and we all ripped them apart for the way that they did it. You know, Taffer was really awesome during this episode because, you know, they were two sisters who were fighting with each other. You know, Steph was a drunk. I mean, I can say Drunky McDrunkerton all you want. You know, they made T-shirts that had Drunky McDrunkerton on it. That
say,
had Steph giving the finger.
It doesn't bother her.
No, I know, and she loves it. And I love Steph. I do. I still, you know, every now and then we text and we tweet and we'll do that sort of stuff. And her husband is a pilot, and they go down to Daytona, and, you know, they're always offering to pick me up on the way and, you know, all of that
That's
stuff.
Awesome.
These are the relationships that we create. It's not because I'm on TV. It's because we create relationships and friendships. That's what happens when you do this show. Betsy and those guys have a bar. Have they changed their ways? No. That's what makes their bar their bar. We went in and we cleaned it up, and they have a new bar that they're able to, they're proud of, that they can do. We got rid of that nasty, disgusting, bacteria-laden carpet that was on the ground. You know, I ripped the door off of a refrigerator, and I threw a birthday cake out that was in somebody that was there for somebody's birthday the next day. You know, there was a picture that Betsy posted two nights ago of her and another woman who were just making stuff in the kitchen. Like, that's good stuff to see. That's great stuff to see. They're successful. They had some really tough times. The town gave them a horrible, horrible time for things that that the show did, like putting the handlebars on the roof and painting a logo on the side of the building. They really gave them a hard time when all these girls wanted to do was to run a good business.
Right.
Now, are they shady in the way that they do stuff? Yeah, but that's the girls. That's what I love about them. You know, are they out there with their boobs hanging out? Yeah, they are. But guess what? That's their personalities. And that's the way that they live their life, and they're not lying about it, and they're not fake about it. They're two of the most real people that I know. Do I agree with the way that they drink and do stuff? No, that's okay. But you know what? It's a part of their life, and they love it, and they have fun, and they're successful women. They're moms. They're business women. They're business owners. You know, it's not our place to judge them. The show forces us to. But they do a hell of a job, and I really, you know, I love Betsy, and I love Steph, and they're fun people. So I'm glad that she was able to call in and say she actually texted me about a half hour before she went on the show, just so you know.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Brian, like you said before, the Brew You episode was the last one that you did. Talk about what you saw from the change of the show, including the O-Face episode. There's a lot of drama with that particular episode. But just in general, it seems like the show, like you said, has taken a weird turn where it's about the drama, not about actually saving the bar. What was your reaction to the O-Face episode, and also your reaction to the way the show has been going since you left it?
You know, I'm going to be totally honest with you. I don't watch TV a lot. You know, the show, from what I've seen, is the first three seasons were really awesome. We had an awesome time doing them. I made some amazing friends between Russell and the bar experts and you know, and Taffer and I had a great relationship and all of that. When I left the show, because I signed a contract with another network to go and do some development on my own end. I left the show because I have a business, and TV is awesome, but TV doesn't pay my bills. TV, you know, puts money into an account or something to that effect. I have to work. And when you go and do a show for 5 days and you're taping and you're out of your home and your business for 7 days, and there's times where you tape until 2, 3, 4 o'clock in the morning, and then you get back to a hotel and you're traveling with 60 guys and you're drinking Johnny Walker Blue with Peter O'Connor, who's the youngest master of whiskey in the world, until 7 o'clock in the morning, you're not getting much business done. Okay? It doesn't happen. So so for me to leave the show and move on for that was for business reasons. I have a lot of media stuff going on that I'm going to be moving into in the next while. The change in the show, can I speak about this? Yeah, because I was on for a lot of time. I loved the seasons that we did, and the reasons why I loved those seasons so much and the episodes that we did for all of them was because there was an educational factor behind it. There were things that were being done that hadn't been done in restaurants before. Taffer's ideas are fresh. They were exciting. To work with him was awesome. It was such a great experience to be next to him and to watch. He's a very powerful man, and he has a lot of awesome things to say. He has a tremendous amount of knowledge that if you ever get a chance just to sit with him for a half hour and to listen to him talk, it's really an impressive thing. He's really a very, very nice man. I feel that the show has taken some of the niceness out of what he is really like, because I think that it's much more based on the dramatic factor. People that watch the show are not really people in the industry anymore. people in the industry watched the show as a religion the first three seasons because they learned stuff. We learned that you don't want to put bar stools, you know, start backs on bar stools.
Right.
And we learned that you have to light a bar. You have to be, light backlight the bar. You have to, there's certain things about the music and the way that the music's played, and we use that information on a daily basis. And I ask people now to say, what did I learn on the last episode? You know, what did you learn?
Right.
I learned that I shouldn't let my bouncer drink. I learned that I shouldn't have somebody behind the bar who has a bad attitude. So I think that the last season was really more dramatic than it was anything else. And I think that takes away from Taffer a little bit, and I think it takes away from the show a little bit because he is a very, very intelligent man. He is a very, very intelligent man. He has his finger on the pulse of a tremendous amount of things. He has knowledge that is unmatched. I think that his knowledge is something that if you have, like I said, the chance to sit and talk with him, let him talk for a while and let him tell you about experiences. And that's what, I took so much from him with that because I did. I worked very closely with him. I did rescue tour with him. I did rescue tour with him for a boatload of times where we went around to people all over the country and talked to them about what it was. It was an honor for me to be able to get out and do that. It was an honor for me to go to NCB at Nightclub and Bar and to speak. It was an honor for me to be up there on stage and talk to people because they trusted me with information. And the reason why they trusted me with the information is because Taffer told them to. Now, I was able to back it up because I do have that experience and I do have that information. And in my business, I prove it on a daily basis. If people call, he called me the best chef in America for years. I don't think I'm the best chef in America. I never, ever, ever would make that claim myself. Do I think that I'm a good chef? I think I'm an awesome chef. Can I cook food and make people like it? Absolutely. Do I have a good flavor profile? 100%. Do I know more about the business of the restaurant than most chefs do? I do believe that I do, which is why I'm good in my business because I get the front of house and back of house. But to call me the best chef in America, please do not take away from the awesome, awesome talent that's out there in this world right now. That's not me. I'm not. Can I do bar food better than anybody? You're damn right that I can. Can I make you suck a wing back better than you ever have and do a car bomb with you and suck it down? You're absolutely right I can. But I'm not the best chef in America, man. Yeah, and I will win. I will win. There's no doubt. So, to kind of finalize that question, I think that the show has become very dramatic. And I notice it because when I walk through the airport on a weekly basis, when I walk through Home Depot, when I walk through the grocery store, when I walk through Macy's or Nordstrom or whatever, the people that recognize me are different than they used to be. I used to get recognized in a bar. I used to get recognized in a restaurant or Restaurant Depot or talking to a Cisco rep or something to that effect. But now I get recognized by mom who's walking through Nordstrom with her three kids because they're watching the show not for the educational factor. They're watching the show for the dramatic factor. And I hope and pray that this show continues, and I hope and pray that this show continues on the simple basis that we want to educate people because people trust John to do that for him, for them.
Couldn't agree with you more.
And again, I said to Katie, when Katie and I were looking at the bars to call, this past season didn't really want to do anything for me because I also think the audience also, like you said, connected with the bars and the experts through those first couple of years, and trying to go back and seeing seeing some of the stuff that you've done, like you just said, like there were so many bars you did, and there was also so many stories that almost like pulled at your heart, like characters, the Moonrunners. When I was doing the pre-tape with them, I got done with Guy. I said, Guy, I feel bad doing this for 2 minutes. I want to have you on live, and he was a guy who I wanted to have live, and we didn't know how we were going to plan the show out, but I said, Moonrunners is a show, the guy, if we can get him on for more than 2 minutes, I would love it. Stephen Brad, we asked everybody, and that's just the most popular one that they did. And, we got Billy, we got Billy to talk to us from the public house for a few minutes. And
He's awesome. Billy's the shit.
Billy's the man. And like when I spoke to him about it, he's like, do I really have to record a message? I speak to everybody all the time. They know the success we're having. They know that they're almost out of debt and everything else like that. So it's it's such a this past season, like when I saw the O-Face episode, I as soon as I saw it, I texted Katie and I just said, "Oh God, this is the worst thing I've ever seen."
Yeah.
Because it's not even the fact that, like, first off, those people put themselves in that position. I just want to go on record and say that. I said
100%.
You know, they put themselves, whether they were told to do anything in particular or not, it's the fact that they were willing to do that. You know, they have to look themselves in the mirror. But like you said, since you stopped doing this, you know, what are some of the other, you talked about signing on with another network, talk to us about some of the other projects that you've been involved with.
You know, I can't talk too much about some of the products that are in development and that are working right now. I will tell you that I'm doing a lot of guest stuff right now. I'm doing a lot of judging. You know, I'm doing some stuff with Food Network in that respect. You know, I'm in contact with my agents. You know, this is a weird conversation for me to have because I'm a chef and that's what I do. I don't consider myself a celebrity, and even though, you know, people look up to me for what I do, I'm the same exact person. So when I have a conversation about talking about my agents or whatever, I had to get an agent because I wanted to make sure that I wasn't getting screwed over in the TV world. The TV world is a horrific business, okay? You're only as good as your last episode, and in some cases, you weren't even good on that episode, okay? You look at the world of reality TV, and it's a world that sucks. You have people that go on shows, and they have an agent before the show even airs. You know, I can talk about a couple of experts that were on Rescue that had agents that the show didn't even air yet, and they were talking about, you know, how good they were and what they should do and all that stuff. You know, I've been in TV for years. I understand that it's all about what you do. Look, I'm a short, fat guy who knows how to cook. Okay, I love what I do. I'm lucky enough that I get to get on TV and I get recognized for being on TV, but. One of my clients had said something to me the other day that was really kind of poignant to me, and it made a lot of sense to me, and it made me feel really good. Because he said to me, well, what can I do? You're coming in to my restaurant, you're developing a menu for me, and you're going to train my staff. What can I do to get you, to get the media and stuff like that? And I said, look, first and foremost, I'm in there to train your staff. I'm not there to do media events. If you want me just for media events, then guess what? I'm going to charge you $15,000 to show up at your front door, and I'll stand there for 2 hours, and I'll shake hands, and we'll do a couple of drinks, and we'll take some pictures, and I'll walk away. Or I can charge you whatever it is that I'm going to charge you to do your menu, to train your staff, and if the media shows up, then guess what? I'll come out with bells on, and I'll smile, and I'll say hi to everybody. But I'm not going to stop doing what I'm doing just to walk out and be on camera. Thursday night, right. I did a VIP party Thursday, I did a VIP in Rockford, Illinois for clients of mine. We relaunched their menu. We did an awesome job. And the owner came in and said, Chef, can you come out and do a bunch of pictures with people? And I said, no. The kitchen isn't ready for me to leave them yet because they don't know 100% about what they're doing. So I can't walk out of the kitchen with good frame of mind and say, hey, guys, good luck selling food that you've never sold before. I'm going to go take some pictures. That's not what it's about.
Right.
It's not what it's about. I'm glad that I did the show. I'm really, really glad. Man, the experiences that I gained were absolutely awesome. Meeting the people that I met and making friends like Katie and making friends like Steve and Brad and all the guys from Moonrunners and from Dimples. You know, I still talk to Dimples people. You know, I mean, that was Ricardo, man. That was Ricardo who left a burger on a thing who had a heart attack in the kitchen. You know?
Yeah.
I mean, these are things that weren't planned. These weren't restaurants that tried to get on the show because they needed a new DJ system. These weren't people that were on the show because they needed free shit. They needed help in their businesses, and they went after that by going on the show. Now, hey, I can create an entire staff of jackasses and screw-ups just to be on the show if I want to. And I hope that they won't pick me because of that. You know, I have had people who have reached out to me and said, we're in hard times. What can we do? Can we get on the show or should we be on the show? And I've said to them in the past, you know, hey, look, I don't suggest going on the show because you're not ready to do that. They're going to rip you apart just so you can get a free kitchen. You know, you guys are too screwed up, so I've lowered my rates to help them. I've worked on different payment scenarios with them so that they don't have to go on the show at this point. If they wanted to do it 2 years ago, I would have said go for it. But right now I don't want them to do that. So...
Now, I have a quick question. Now, because we're doing, we're talking about the show kind of being more dramatic and less educational, do you think that the remodels and the concepts are any, you know, cheaper? Do you think that they're actually being shortchanged as far as the new bar goes?
You know, I can't speak on that because I don't know what's going into it. I know that the design teams that are on the show are amazing. To watch what these guys can do in the short amount of time that they do is absolutely unbelievable. This is a crew of people that can go into a restaurant that looked like Moonrunners and do what they did. This is a group of people that can go into the golf bar that we did in Tennessee and turn that around to a stunning, stunning-looking bar called Brew U. You know, these are places that you know, so can I speak on the interior aspect of it, the concepts of what they're doing? No, because in all honesty, Katie, I haven't watched the show that intently lately, so I don't know that much about what the new concepts are.
But they have the same crew?
Yeah, from when I left, you know, I mean, they do. They've got the same designers.
That's
they've
good.
Got the same people. The behind-the-scenes people that you guys don't get to see, Katie, you did, but Randy, you have not, and anybody who's listening to this right now, you have no idea what these people are like.
Right.
They're unbelievable.
Yeah,
they're
they do it very, very quickly and very detailed.
Yeah, they're amazing. I mean, everybody from the PAs and grips and people that are pulling cables down to the executive producers and the editing. You know, I used to get tweets and texts from people that were editing the shows because they couldn't believe that they saw what they just saw. You know, they're unbelievable the way that they pull these things together. To watch a field producer pull together, you know, John walks through the restaurant and he says, we need this, we need this, we need this, we got to get this, we have to find this, we need to get this, hurry up and get this. And to watch a field producer like a Heather Gordon to be able to pull that together as fast as she did, or a John Paul to be able to do that, to watch a person like Narice Nedrosian, who is the culinary producer, who not only has to deal with the kitchen staff, but also has to deal with the bar staff, who has to make sure that the menus are printed, who has to make sure that we have enough food in the restaurant to get through a mock service or a stress test or something like that. These are people that you don't ever see that I got to drink with on a weekly basis, that I got to hang out with and got to know, and really, truly, and I can say this honestly, that I got to love. You know, Tim Warren, who's the executive producer on the show, every time we did an episode, him and I would go out to dinner. You know, every time that, you know, I was walking on the show and there's GT Taylor, who's standing there with his cowboy hat on and his sneakers, and he just looks at me with a big old smile and says, what's up, brother? You know, I mean, those are people that you get to know and love by doing the show as much as you do. And I'll tell you what, I got to give it to Taffer, man, because this guy is on the road. God, he's got to be 300 days a year, sleeping in hotels or, he's lucky when he does shows that are around Vegas and L.A. and all that stuff because he gets to go home for a little while. You know, it's not easy being on TV. You know, I have two little girls that are 10 and 13, and I've got a girlfriend who's an awesome human being, and Katie, you know Jill, and the fact that I have to leave at times like that and leave those people to go and do it, it's not fun. You know, my daughter calls me at 7 o'clock when I'm in the middle of taping something and I can't talk to her. It's not an easy thing. The crew leaves their family for a year.
Right.
They leave everybody. You know, we have guys on the show who have gotten engaged, and they've been on the road for 50 days. You know, I mean, it's amazing, but it's the behind-the-scenes stuff that goes on is unbelievable to watch. Because you know what? There's times where we're drinking in a lobby until 6 o'clock in the morning, and you see a design crew come walking through the door, and we left there 5 hours ago.
Yeah.
It's an amazing, amazing show that they put together, and to watch them do it's unbelievable. So, yeah, it's a pretty impressive feat, man. So no matter whether you're learning something or not, the behind the scenes is still exactly the same. So
that's good to know.
Yeah.
Yeah, shout out to Nancy Hadley. I remember her well from our episode. She was amazing. And she even stayed a day or two after everyone else left, and she was popping in and visiting us and just seeing how everything was going.
You know, I just did a Nancy and I have clients together, which are two guys that are up in Vancouver on Vancouver Island in Maple Bay. And these are guys that have been telling me they were going to open a bar forever. And they became very close with Nancy, and I became very close with them. And we just opened the restaurant 2 weeks ago on Vancouver Island in a little place called Maple Bay, and it's a place called The Lion Rampant. And I designed the menu, and Nancy did the entire interior. And if anybody goes to my site or Facebook or Twitter, and Facebook I'm Chef Brian Duffy, and Twitter I'm Chef Bri Duff, and Instagram, which is Chef Bri Duff as well, you'll be able to see some of the transformations. But Nancy just posted all of her transformation from the beginning to the end of doing the Lion Rampant in Maple Bay on Vancouver Island. And Nancy is awesome. I love Nancy. She is like my sister. I see her, and my heart warms, and I want to hug her, and I want to thank her for just everything that she does, because she's such an awesome person and is so talented and has such a great vision. And she's a friend. She's a good friend.
That's awesome.
I
don't think a lot of people who see the show realize the amount of detail that go into it. So for people who saw, say, my episode, all of the pictures on the wall were individually picked out and framed of our old bar and everything that went wrong with it turning into our new bar. And then we had hand-painted signs that said, you know, Murphy's Law, whatever can go wrong will go wrong. And even the candle holders had parking tickets and parking fines printed on them and things like that. There was so much detail that you don't get to see on the show, but that you realize this entire group of people dreamt up every little piece of it and made it happen within, like, 48 hours maybe.
Yeah. Yeah, it's impressive.
It's awesome.
Now, Duff, I got to bring this up because, you know, usually it's a sports show, and obviously tonight we get the night off from this. And, you know, we were talking a little bit before, you know, Katie is a Raven fan, you're an Eagle fan, I'm a Giant fan. You and I are rivals. So, like, that's, you know, that's from an NFL standpoint, you know, you and I are rivals. But I still look at it like this: we're still better than the Ravens. So.
I love Philadelphia, and the reason why is because of two simple words, which is really three words, but we put two together in one, and it's the Broad Street Bullies, man. 70s hockey in Philadelphia was completely amazing. And I'm 42. I don't remember it, but I know the stories of it, and I know kind of following it through the 70s and into the 80s. And you know, we're a blue-collar town, man. We're a blue-collar town that we're a little town. We're really not that big in comparison to a lot of the other cities. But we have a horrific attitude, and you do not mess with us, because guess what? We're going to tell you what a piece of shit you are. It doesn't matter if you are or not. We're going to make you feel like that by the time you're done talking to us.
I'm so happy we're friends.
We have great sports teams, and we have great sports teams. Unfortunately, in some cases, we just don't seal the deal all the time. You know, we just don't catch that ball. We just don't block that shot. We just don't. You know, we may not be blocking the net the way that we should. But we work our asses off to get to that point, to get to that Super Bowl, to get to that World Series, you know, to get to that NBA championship, to get to that Stanley Cup final. Unfortunately, we just can't kind of follow through. And it's a shame sometimes, but I'll tell you what, I love our teams. We have a great group of guys that are on every team that we have that are very big into charity and giving back, and maybe this season a bunch of them won't give back so much and we'll win some championships.
Well, hopefully so. Now, the next question is, what we need to do is we all need to find a way to get in one place. Brian, for you and I, it's a long overdue. You and I were trying to plan that for a while, but
I'm in New York on June 12th. I'm doing a Food Network show that day, so maybe I don't know what time I'm taping or anything. I know I'm only up there for the day because I think I have to fly out the next day. But maybe we'll communicate prior, and if we can meet up and have a drink or whatever. I'm taping over in Brooklyn, but I always come in and out of Penn Station.
That should work, actually. What we'll do is also maybe toward, if that doesn't work towards the end of the summer, maybe we'll get Katie up in New York, and then we'll find a way to make that happen.
That
I think we're gonna
go to Bungalow.
Yes. Maybe that's what we all should do. So, Brian, we had a bunch of the different bars on. We heard updates from Candlebar Cafe. I feel really bad because they didn't get to go on when we were live on air. It's played afterwards. So just to sum it up, and we'll go to you, Brian, and Katie, and then I'll give my opinion to close everything out. If you had to say what Bar Rescue has meant to you, what would it be?
Friendships. I've created and gained a tremendous amount of friendships from being on that show, whether it be through working with Mitch Benjamin, who when I first started on the show was just kind of he was a PA. He was an assistant to watching him to move up to a camera guy. That was a friendship that was created. A friendship that I had with Taffer in the beginning was a friendship. Friendships with the producers and the crew that I still have were something that I will cherish. Friendships that I've gained from things like Twitter and Facebook and Instagram and stuff like that with people that, you know, I mean, Katie, you and I have stayed in touch through Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, you know? I mean, there's fans that are out there that have reached out to me, and some of the stuff that nobody really sees is the emails that I get and the messages that I get from people that are on the show. You know, I'm going to open up my page right now, and I'm literally just going to go into a message, you know, that is just some of the stuff that I read that I get back from people is just unbelievable. You know, here's a guy who sent something to me. He says, "Chef, I just want to thank you for giving me the inspiration that you give me to stay in the business. I was getting ready to leave, and I wasn't really sure what to do. I'm now going to ask you for some advice on management. I've been working in an urban town and have had no GM for almost a year in my store. We've all talked about it before. I've been having trouble with my temper. I tend to yell and get upset a lot lately when I tell an employee to do something. Most of the response is that I've been like this for days and no other manager has said anything. Or they get an attitude and say that I'm not closing and stuff like that. You know, to have people reach out to me and ask me questions like that is something that I take important. I try to respond to every person, and I try to have conversations with them. But I've now gained a friend in this guy because as I look through the thread, you know, this message has been going forward since May 6th of 2013. So he's asked me questions since May 6th of 2013. So, you know, I've gained friendships through all of this. To the point, you know, I'm lucky enough in my business that I don't have to, deal with the jackasses of the bar world. I can tell somebody that I don't want to do business with them. I had to fire a client a couple of weeks ago. Yes, I fired a client, a well-paying client, somebody who paid me on time every single time, but I didn't want to deal with his staff anymore. I didn't like his staff, and I didn't like the way that he was handling his staff. So I said, hey, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm ending our contract in 30 days. I don't want to do this business with you anymore. And that's what has to happen sometimes. You know, but I've gained friendships in every restaurant that I've opened. I have friends that I pull from that in shows that I did, friends like Katie, friends like the guys at Black Sheep, and friends like people at, you know, I made friends, I wasn't even in Brad and Steve's episode, and they're friends of mine. You know, and I consider that, literally, I was texting with Brad this afternoon, at 4:45 this afternoon, because a friend of mine who's a UFC fighter is going to New Orleans this weekend, and he said, where should I go? And it wasn't even a hesitation. Go and stop and see Brad and Steve. I texted Brad at the same time and said, hey, bud, do you mind if I give so-and-so your phone number? He's coming in town. And he replied back to me and said, if he's a friend of yours, brother, he's a friend of mine. Give him my phone number, and I have an apartment above the bar if he needs a place to stay. Those are the friends that I've gained on this show.
That's awesome.
And how about you, Katie?
Wow. to follow Duffy.
To follow that.
okay, so I know, I don't even want to piggyback off of him, but I feel a very similar way. I'm on a much smaller scale. I don't exactly get the fan mail, but it just gives me, yes, I mean, the main person I've kept since the episode is Brian Duffy, and then we get to see each other maybe once a year. And I've met people through him, obviously, like Randy. So it's been a great, you know, it's been a great way to just network, and because great people know great people, to just network with the right people and the type of people that I want to know and I want to do business with. And it's also just given me this very cool thing. It gives me a very cool subject to talk to strangers about. People who I might have had nothing in common with want to come up and always talk about it, and I love talking about it because it's by far the coolest thing that I've done in my life so far. So it's just been a very cool outlet for me, despite the fact that my bar did not work out. One day I will have my own.
Yeah.
And
you
I'll
will.
Call Chef Brian Duffy if I need consulting.
Yeah.
Well, for me to put a bow on this whole entire thing, besides the fact that, you know, I was able to meet Katie through you, Brian, and you've also brought stuffs into my life, which also made me have a very full, you've had maybe had a very full belly for the last 2 days because I've been using it like crazy. Which, by the way, the chicken cordon bleu burger is now my favorite burger in the world.
Nice.
The one thing that I can say is, for me, you know, when I first started talking with Katie and I was explaining to her my method of thinking is, when I have interest in something, I want to know everything about it. And, you know,
yeah.
I found a way to talk with you and make it into sports. You know, we're working on this feature about food with sports bars and the type of food that would be good for games. If you remember, we had that conversation during the interview. And you know, when you have something that's you find interesting, you want to know about it. And, you know, through that, that's like my life mantra. It's basically, you know, as soon as I started working with Katie, I'm like, wouldn't it be cool? Because, like, we watch the show every single week, and we're amazed every single week. What happens after, you know, okay, they get the little update after John leaves. What happens after the episode airs? And Katie and I started talking about what we want to do with this episode and what we were going to do. And until we confirmed that you were going to be on with us, I really had no idea up until about, I think, 8:30 last night, and how I was going to put this whole thing together, how we were going to put this whole thing together. But I look back at everything that I do with sports and everything else like that. I'm very, very blessed, and I don't take any of it for granted. At what point I did take it for granted, and I almost lost it all. And,
yep, I know the feeling.
So for me to be doing these types of shows and talking with, like I just tweeted out before, I felt like I was on an all-star panel, and I was just a guy just observing it. You know, it just felt so amazing to be around that. Things like this motivate you to keep wanting to work hard. And being able to talk with you and just sit back and enjoy doing this tonight and have Katie on my side. You know, Katie, I can't tell you how many ideas I run by Katie, and Katie's like, okay, let's do it. And every idea, and she thinks I'm nuts because I put the ideas to work, and they work. So for what you did for me, I can never say thank you enough. And what Katie's done for stepping up here and, you know, being a part of Back Sports Page and doing this, I think we're going to have to do another rescue edition. I think that's what's going to end up having to happen. I was.
Oh yeah, all
more
of a sudden
shocked.
Everybody wanted to be on.
Like, well, not even
well,
that.
Well, and you know what's funny is Katie, I'm going to give you kudos because I'll tell you what, you did an awesome job promoting this and getting it out.
Yeah,
there.
She did. Yes, she did.
You,
yeah,
I mean,
thank
just
you.
Literally, you what you did was just amazing. I mean, it was great. I wish that all my clients had the passion and the vigor like you just showed in the last 24 hours to get this up to where it was. I mean, to be able to pull that many people through, and I don't know if you guys reached out to them or they reached out to you or what had happened, but, I mean, you know, you're doing a lot of the stuff the right way, and we, you know, we talked about Twitter and stuff like that. So you banged it out of the park, man. You really did a hell of a job. So
yeah, she was awesome. And I'll be honest with you, Brian, you know, I do a show every single week, and I was looking at the stats throughout this, and it's the fact that, you know, you guys were all tweeting about it. It started taking off, and like we weren't expecting Sean to call it. Like, we didn't know that was happening. You know,
yeah.
You know, we had a couple of. You know, I wasn't expecting to hear from the girls from the Handlebar Cafe today. And like when we were when I was calling people about this, I was hoping this wasn't going to be a dud. That was my biggest fear. But I even said to some people earlier today, I'm like, this is the first time in a long time I'm actually nervous about doing something. So
wow.
This was good. And that Katie, for all the conversations Katie has, I don't think she's ever heard me ever say that I'm nervous about something. So this was exciting. This was fun, and I'm pouring my heart out from people who are going to be downloading this because this is all the download part. but that's fine. You know, I think people like to hear the true emotion. I'm really appreciative of you, and I'm looking forward. I think what needs to happen, since Katie is an honorary New York person, like when she's not a Ravens fan, she's a Giants fan. So that's fine. I think we need to do a Giants Eagles game. I think that's what has to happen now. I think we're now at that point.
And I hate to tell you, but I think the place to do that is in Philadelphia because it's halfway, man.
Well, I'm not going to lie to you. I do. If I ever walk into that stadium, I will fear my life. And I was going to say
it's the only one with a jail in it.
Randy, can I tell you something real fast about fearing for life?
Sure.
About 6 years ago, I did an event with James Beard House and Food Network, where we did a show. We did a charity event to raise money for James Beard House in Dallas, Texas. Me and four other chefs went to Dallas to do a competition between us five and five chefs from Dallas. They put us up in a hotel, and we had to go and we had to do an Iron Chef-style competition with five of us against five of them. The night before it happened, we went to the last night we were there, we were at the last Monday night football game at Texas Stadium in Dallas. And I'm a sports fan. I enjoy it. I don't follow it as much as I wish I could, but I never wear gear. I don't wear a jersey. I don't wear a hat. That's something that these guys do. I wouldn't expect somebody to walk around wearing a Brian Duffy chef jacket, okay? So I'm not going to wear the jerseys and the hats. And they said, you guys really, no, come on, you guys have to do it. It's part of the thing we're doing. So I threw a green jersey on, an Eagles jersey, and I threw a green jersey visor on, or a green Eagles visor on. And they took a police escort to get us down to the stadium. We had an unbelievable tailgate in the parking lot. And then they said, all right, everybody, let's go. It's time to go into the game. And they handed us our tickets, and they said, go. And they let five guys in Eagles jerseys loose in Texas Stadium at the last Monday night football game at Texas Stadium. Supposedly, one of the best Monday night football games in the history of Monday night football. And I was scared shitless, dude. I was scared to death. People are screaming at us, yelling at us, just literally throwing things at us. And we went the wrong way around the stadium and went the long way to get to our seats. So not only did we have to go through it once, but we had to go through it twice. It was unbelievable. It was the worst thing that I've ever experienced. But at the same time, listening to people tell me to go to hell and that I'm going to die and they're going to kill me when we get out into the parking lot as we're standing in the end zone of Texas Stadium, and then the next thing you know, the Eagles scored. And then they're looking at us, and then Dallas scores, and it goes back and forth and back and forth. And a friend of mine whose name is Brendan called me halfway through the whole thing, and I felt like my ears were bleeding because it was so loud inside of that dome. It was unbelievable. So that was probably one of the scariest and greatest experiences in sports that I've ever had. So I know what you're talking about, bud. Yeah.
Yeah.
It was impressive.
So
you won't catch me
what we're
at
saying.
The Steelers game.
So we just established that if we happen to do this idea and do it in Philadelphia, I'm not going to be wearing any Giants gear. So
yeah, we'll tell you where to go.
What
you know what?
I was in
the night
gear.
The night that the Rangers beat the Flyers. I was coming home. I had meetings the entire day, and I had a dinner meeting with my PR company, and I was walking into. I was walking into Penn Station as the game let out, and I was in the bathroom, and some guy, I'm literally peeing, I'm at the stall, and some guy looks over and looks at me dead face, and he's like, Chef, I love you on TV, now get the fuck back to Philadelphia. So, yeah, and then they screamed at us as we boarded the train and just yelled and berated us and degraded us as we got on the train. It was pretty funny, man. But that's what sports are. It's about passion. It's like anything else. They're passionate about it.
Agreed.
So this was Brian, I really hope you had fun with us tonight with everything. I really hope you did. And it was funny, Katie just sent out a tweet saying, "We're still recording." So that was
personalities. Come on.
Yeah, well, I hope people enjoy it, and I hope they feel the passion that went into it from everybody. I mean, the people that you had on the show are the people that are memorable, and I can add myself into this or take it out. It doesn't matter because of the people that were in here. But everybody's passionate about what they do, and as I say to people all the time, I can teach you how to cook, and I can teach you how to be a successful chef, but I can't teach you how to be passionate about this business. And I interviewed a kid the other day who was so passionate about it, and he lied to me the entire time that he interviewed. And I finally stopped him halfway through, and I said, "Do me a favor and shut up. Stop talking. Because you're lying to me right now." I said, "I can teach you how to be a better chef, and I can teach you how to learn this business, but I can't teach you what you have already inside of you, which is the passion for what you do." You had a very passionate group of people on this show tonight. So I hope that this is one of the highest rated shows that you have, and I hope that it's something that you'll remember, and I hope that it's something that we can do again.
I'll be honest with you, to me, for someone like you guys were involved with it, for me, who's just a fan, Like I said before, I tweeted out. It was like me being around a bunch of all stars and like said starstruck. I was just like,
Did you learn something?
Yeah, the first thing I learned is don't piss up Brian. The second thing, if you always listen to what Taffer says. The thing that I did learn the most is if you are not as passionate about what you do as everybody who's been on this show tonight is, and that's not just the people who were on all at one time. I'm talking about Lana from the Lana's Katina and some of the other places, Guy from Moonrunners. If you're not passionate and you're not as committed to what you want and what you do for a living, then you probably shouldn't be doing that. And you should go find what you're passionate about. Right. We took this little idea from this growing sports online magazine and turned it into, a show. We took a show that's very popular on Spike TV and found people who were on the show, and it gained interest. And some of those bartenders who those bar places who I called and who we spoke to, they really didn't probably really understand what we were trying to do, and they probably didn't pass along the message to people that they were doing this. But maybe next time now it'll be a little bit more, and it'll help grow the Back Sports Page brand and the Real Sports Talk Radio brand, and that's what we're looking to do. And, I knew when I was talking with Katie that it wasn't a hard sell to get her to come aboard with us, but I saw ahead of time, I was able to look ahead and to see what she's such an asset, and she's probably be a better friend than she is an asset, but She's turned out to be a bolt, so.
That's great. Oh, she's a good chick, man.
Yeah.
Good people find each other. That's the way it happens. We're all connectors in life.
And you know what the worst part is, Brian?
Good people know good people.
What's that?
The worst part about this is now this is being recorded, so Katie's gonna be able to hold this over me by saying nice things.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Both of you. I'm just sitting here loving this.
Well, good people got to stick together, man.
You both are pretty great, too.
No, thank you. Well, thank you guys very much for doing this tonight. I have to do the usual sign-off. Real Sports Talk Radio can be heard every Monday night from 7 to 8:30. Real Sports Talk Radio on Facebook. Like us. Join the fun. Next week's guest is to be announced. It's looking more and more like it will be Jamal Mashburn. So with that being said, thank you guys both, and we'll talk to everybody soon.
Absolutely. Take care.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye.